right, it's September the 17th, 2022. It's about 1:05 p.m. Central Daylight Time. I'm David Knight, the host of Prodigy FK's CSI Dallas presents The Journey, our monthly meeting. I want to welcome everybody in attendance and also welcome everybody that will be seeing this on YouTube, which will go up tomorrow. Speaking of YouTube, we have officially reached over 300 subscribers. We're at 321 just before the meeting. For those of you that have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do so. You can hit the subscribe button on any of our videos, and then you'll be the first to know when our new videos pop up and when we make announcements on YouTube. So please make sure you hit that subscribe button, check out all the videos. I'm really excited to see that we've hit over 300, and our next goal is obviously is going to be 500. So, hopefully we'll have that by Dallas. Speaking of Dallas, we are having an upcoming conference. Let me share my screen here. So that I can get it where I need it to be at. Hold on just a second. Okay, David Denton will be on shortly with us, but you can get the information from not only ProdigyFK.com, but you can also go to the JFKHistorical.com website and click on the conference tab. The date is going to be November 17th through the 20th. It's going to be an in-person conference. We are getting ready to add in a journey, or I'm sorry, not a journey meeting. We're getting ready to add on a Zoom portion of our conference. So for those that have not been able, or not going to be able to attend in person, whether financial or whether it's the fact of, you know, coming in person, we are going to be simulcasting on Zoom just like we have in our previous conferences. So again, November 17th through the 20th, the location is going to be the DoubleTree Dallas Market Center near downtown Dallas at the Hilton. We have a event schedule now posted. The event schedule is going to be Thursday, November 17th from 8 o'clock in the evening until, well, whenever we get done. A meet and greet with speakers that are available that will already be there. And then Friday morning, we kick off November the 18th. 8 o'clock in the morning, we're going to kick off and go until roughly 9 o'clock. We'll be ending with Gary Shaw, it looks like. From 9 o'clock until whenever, we're going to have a social going on in the hotel lobby. Saturday, we kick off at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we will be closing at 8:45 on Saturday. And then Sunday, we have between, looks like here on the schedule, between 9 and 10 a.m., a small group of Q&A between speakers and guests in the breakout room, lobby areas. For those that didn't get a chance to, you know, get a chance to speak to somebody that you want to talk to before you get back on the plane or in your car to go back home, for those that are still available to meet with everybody, they will be there. And starting at 10 o'clock, Prodigy FK will be offering a tour of Dealey Plaza, and I'm working on a bus portion to important sites around Oak Cliff. So if we can get the bus portion done, we will have that available as well, but we are definitely going to be offering a walking tour. Hopefully it's not as cold as what it was a few years ago when I was down in Dallas. So that will be hosted by Casey Quinlan, Brian Edwards, and myself. And then Tuesday, for those that are still in town, looks like there's going to be a Dallas from Dealey Plaza Remembrance Ceremony. That's going to be led by Judith Baker. So I just want to point that out, that you can get tickets to the event. You can purchase tickets here. Event details is in the Learn More, and you can also make your reservations. I know that we're filling up quickly on our list of blocks of rooms. It's a special rate, so if you wait very much time after probably the end of this month, the special price of the hotel rooms are not going to be available. They will be full rate. We can only block out a certain amount of rooms, but there is another hotel across the street. I don't know what their pricing is. A lot of hotels have gone up in price since the pandemic, but the purchase of the ticket price for the in-person portion, you can click on, and it's a You can go from anywhere to do just the conference itself, or you get the conference and the banquet. We also are going to offer lunch, two of the days. We also offer a big purchase package price, and, this includes the, two lunches, the dinner banquet, the weekend conference. That is $215. If you just want just the general admission conference by itself, it's $115. But what's nice about purchasing the conference package is during, lunch and during the lunches and during the dinner, if you don't have a ticket because of the hotel putting in, the amount of food that we need for each person, they aren't going to know who we're supposed to serve and who we're not supposed to serve. So during those times, if you don't have a lunch or a dinner banquet ticket, you can't be in the room, during that time. You'll have to go on your own, and then you'll miss out on the important keynote speakers that we have during the lunches and the dinners. So, it's actually a good price just to, you know, be able to get the full package, and then you don't have to leave. There is going to be a dinner on your own. I believe that's going to be Friday night. Yes, Friday night's going to be dinner on your own. Now, during that time, the conference will shut down for the, I think it's an hour and 20 minutes, hour and a half. You're free to go where you want to go, get your food, eat, and then, you know, come back to, in the evening on Friday night. But, the dinner banquet and the lunches, again, you have to have a ticket to attend. Let me answer this real quick. All right, I want to talk about another conference that's going to be coming up, and let me see if I have Neil Saffate in the audience. Neil, are you with me?
I am, David. I'm just eating dinner at the moment.
Oh, well, okay. I just wanted
would you let me finish eating dinner, and then I can tell you what was the question, David?
Basically, I just wanted to announce, while you're eating dinner, I want to announce that we're going to have the honor, me and Brian and Casey, of speaking at the Dealey Plaza UK conference, which is going to be October the 1st and 2nd. They're actually having their conference the month before we have ours, so that way there's no confliction or having to, try to have things go on, you know, in different locales, so to speak. And I'll have Neil come on and talk about that here when he gets done with his dinner. But, it's going to be October 1st and 2nd, and I know we're not the only ones there, but we're really honored. We wanted to do this last year, but we had a fall through with scheduling. We are planning on doing that October 1st and 2nd. So we're virtually going over the pond to attend their conference and speak there. All right, so. Let's see here. I want to open up with, Larry Snapp. Larry, you got some updates for me on, what's going on in your world of, suing the government to get the documents and get us some, information that we desperately need. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. You can hear me, right?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. First thing I want to say is that, with respect to our lawsuit with President Biden, we have found the plaintiff. We're not ready to disclose it yet publicly, but our complaint is in the final versions. We're getting comments from the plaintiff, our client, and we will be filing a lawsuit by the end of the month. And that will be alleging that President Biden failed to comply with the JFK Records Act. When he postponed the records, the amount that he postponed the records last year. We are hoping that this will be one of the, we have kind of like a triad, sort of like when the government had a triad of nuclear responses. We have a couple of legs in our strategy, and this is one of them, to get the government to, do a comprehensive release in December. I've been in weekly phone, telephone and email conversations with the oversight, the House Oversight Committee, in response to the letter that we sent to Carolyn Maloney asking for a hearing. As of now, we don't know if there's going to be any time left on the calendar for the Congress is very short this fall because they're, you know, it's an election year. But the first thing they've done is the incoming archivist is having her confirmation hearing. It's going to be held by the Senate Homeland Committee. And they have propounded some questions for the committee to ask her with respect to some of the information that has been generated as a result of my lawsuit with NARA. Also, Joe Backes has helped, along with Rex Bradford, in terms of going through the spreadsheets that were provided to me and helping to point out how the NARA's records are really not comprehensive at this point, the missing records. I'm continuing to get a batch of, the confirmation is going to be held by the Senate Homeland Committee. If any of you have a senator who sits on that committee, I suggest you contact them, to make sure that, you know, this is a fulsome committee hearing. A lot of this stuff happens at the staff level, but we want to make sure that, we have, when she has her confirmation hearing, that there are some questions asked. That's only one of the tools of oversight that I'm working with the committee. I have some other ideas that we're working with. I believe they're going to contact the Office of Legal Counsel, the White House as well, but I'll keep you posted on that. I got the latest batch of records from my lawsuit. They cover the period of April, March 2018, which, as you know, is the period of time that President Trump did his 3.5-year postponement. David, can I I'd like to share some of these documents. Can I just share screen? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead and share screen.
Okay. Let's see. So what is this? Okay. So what I'm sharing is this is a document that in January of 2018, January 25th, NARA sent letters to the agencies that had requested the 6-month extension or that were subject to 6-month extension, asking them basically saying, you know, we need to know what documents you're going to release or request to be held back. So this was the response of the Department of Defense, and you'll see that they are asking for a continued postponement using the statutory language, but they're just making a very generic, they're not doing a document-by-document review. They're just giving just generalized grounds. They're alleging this qualifies under the Act. And then they're asking that they say they have no documents withheld in full. There's only 286 documents with partial redactions and 179 additional documents previously withheld. I'm sure Joe would disagree with that. And look at this. They were proposing a 10-year postponement.
Right.
So let me stop this document. Let me get to my next document. Hold on a second. That was Department of Defense. So... So this is the letter that NARA sent out to all the agencies in January. This one happens to be the Department of Justice. So you see they refer to the President's memo, review every other records, redactions over the next 180 days. They wanted to have a response by March 12th. And you'll notice, here's what they're being told. They must provide information to NARA on every document proposed for postponement in full or part. And then they remind them that Trump's memo said that only in the rarest cases is there any legitimate need for continued protection. So that's the letter that went out. So you can see how the government's, the Department of Defense's response was, did not comply. Let's see, what's the next one chronologically? What is this now? Okay. So here's an interesting email exchange with the FBI and Martha Murphy. So the FBI had indicated in December of 2017 that there were 45 records designated as not believed to be relevant. And they did some research. And it turns out that FBI was claiming these documents were sent. And it turned out that the RIFs and the postponement sheets were transferred, but not the records. So now they're asking the FBI to again search their holdings for these records. This is the kind of silly stuff that was going on. Now let me see here. Okay, so this is the FBI, another FBI document. The FBI, by the one, has always been the agency. It's sort of been under the radar screen, but they have pushed back vigorously. They're the ones that, during the ARB process, actually appealed to the president to overrule the ARB decisions to disclose. So they have always been pushing back. So this involves a bunch of records, and the thing I want to point out here is that so they were using, I guess the Department of Justice uses this 100-year rule, where if you can't determine if the person is alive, then they say they postpone the record for 100 years. And so they claim they go through a search, and there are people that can't claim, they say they can't identify as being alive. And so they're proposing for those people to continue to redact the records. And you can see here, the FBI applied judicially recognized 100-year rule, meaning if the individual was born 100 years ago, the individual is presumed dead. So if they're not dead, their names can't be disclosed. And they supposedly went through a whole process, and NARA's response was, well, we did a Google search, and you can tell, I mean, they have 6,000 mafia records that they're holding back. So there are some records that they're asking to be postponed. And here's there's 2,117 previously withheld names are now being disclosed, which translates to 3,389 documents. FBI's information is released in full. The remaining redactions and the remaining documents are kept to the absolute minimum, they claim. And the living individuals, and then there's grand jury and internal revenue. So they're proposing 5 years. Again, they're going beyond what the president ended up asking for. So let me get out of here. This, let me see what's left here. Is this the one I want to, I think I shared this one already. Yeah, I said this one already. So that just gives you a kind of a flavor of what we're seeing in these records as that are being disclosed. Now, there's a lot of underlying memos that have been redacted in full that we're going to have to go back to the court to try to get released. It appears that each of the memos that ended up in the memos of National Archives, so as I told you last time, from the emails we could glean that NARA was pushing back hard on the grounds that the agencies were using to object to, this is the untold story that I have to try to get out to the media. The NARA was pushing back on these agencies' grounds for postponing. And then they got put into a position of basically recommending to the president that there be a further postponement and saying that the postponement was consistent with the act. And in each of these memos, the one in September of 2017 and the one in March of 2018, there are a dozen versions of those memos. So they evolved. And it's no doubt that they were being edited by the White House counsel. And they would go back and they would go back and forth. Those are the documents that we want to get our hands on. And the dates were apparently changing too. There is a email exchange between Bosanko, who's the chief operating officer of NARA, and David Ferrara, who was then the archivist, basically saying, it's going to have to be the date of 2021, and the president's going to have to own this date. So obviously there were dates that were later on, and then this was, this date was chosen. Now, what these documents also reveal is that the story that was circulating, the anecdotal story that the president at the last minute changed his mind in March of 2018 is not correct. These agencies were asking for delays, you know, as soon as they got the memo from NARA. So this was, they asked for a delay in September of 2017. They got it in October. And then when NARA started emailing them or sending them letters in January, the immediate reaction was to postpone again. Nothing changed in 6 months in their mind. So this was something that was contemplated all along. It wasn't like the president was on the verge of releasing everything and then Pompeo got to him at the last minute. That was the story that was circulating. The email chain and the memo show that this was well in place before any such story. Is it possible that the president was going to release them? No, because the archivist's letter to the president in the end of March of 2018 recommended 3.5 years and said that this was consistent with the act. So the story that hasn't got out is that the National Archives fabricated publicly that they agreed that this was compliance with the act. They did not believe that internally. The emails and the memos show that. And we have to get that out to the media that they fell on their sword. They were the loyal bureaucrats. So the next dump of records I'm going to get, they'll be chronologically, the next dump of records will be right around the time that the president issued his memo. But once we finish the Trump phase of the production, we're probably going to go into court and try to get all these underlying memos that have been going back and forth to see exactly what the changes were and what grounds they were using. Happy to take any questions or any comments.
Yeah, let's start off here. So basically, what I'm understanding here is it's Trump obviously came out and said, yeah, he's going to release everything, and then, you know, the agencies step back and go, guess what? It's not going to happen. Especially you said the FBI, those are the ones that are kicking back the most of a wall, so to speak. I don't want to use that term, you know, weirdly, but they're kind of putting up a wall to the fact of getting the documents released. It seems like
the Department of Defense, the DEA, the ATF, the State Department, all did push back. But I'm saying FBI has been, everyone has been focusing on the Department of Defense and the national security apparatus.
Uh-huh.
FBI has been kind of like been able to fly low under the radar screen, but they are as bad a violator as any, and perhaps I would say, in my opinion, they are worse than the CIA. But that's just my opinion.
Larry, may I chime in on that?
Sure.
For those who do not know me, I am Freddie Filmon Spanauer's daughter. I'm 62. He lived to be 91, died in 2014. He was Master Chief, United States Navy. And years before he died, I found out what he had been involved in. And I had documentation to prove everything. But I'm going to jump to your topic about the FBI and the National Archives. Dad was filming there in Dewey Plaza that day. And he had led Bait 62 heavy photo recon over Cuba when I was born in Jacksonville, Florida in 1960. Dad said that there were things when the they went to Antarctica for the animal bird, there were things even the Navy admirals could not get. He would go to the National Archives, and Admiral Byrd privately told Dad to call him Dickie, but in public, never tell anybody that. He's Admiral Byrd. And Admiral Byrd needed to go to Congress to get some documents, and he couldn't get them, so it'd take 3 months. It would delay Operation Deep Freeze 1. So Dad left, went over to National Archives to a certain location, certain floor, came back with it, and Admiral Byrd asked him, how the hell did you get this? And he says, I can't tell you that. And I have documentation when my dad was ONI school for a time. He was FBI, and he was also CIA, and a lot of people didn't know that. He told me that before he died, he broke his oath to take it to the grave, and he wanted his last debriefing. Lost his handler. A congressman told me to contact the Dallas FBI. They would not help me. They would not help the congressman. This congressman had to go all the way back to Washington to that address I gave him to get Dad's last debriefing. He wouldn't talk to anyone unless they knew his code name. And it was at that point, I thought all these stories Dad had told me that I was together. He said, I didn't think you'd figure it out. People like you who know don't live very long. And then I got involved in this community of you gentlemen and you researchers, the logistics, statistics, ballistics. And Dad told me there's certain things the presidents would not release. And it wasn't the FBI holding them by stranglehold. It was the National Archives, the Department of Defense, because there's some things that happened back during the 60s and through 63 that would still harm our country today to keep her system of freedoms freedom. That was the only reason he told me that anything would be redacted for JFK would be for that. And I'm talking about a man who was in Tulagi Bay during World War II, JFK.
Yeah, so, I think they're, you know, when you look at the grounds they're using, it's national security grounds, and you have to ask
it's been 75 years since World War II. You know, history belongs to the victors who write it, and the truth of what's out there is different than the narrative they've given us since World War II and since 63. And it's time to spread the sunshine, and the only way to do that is what you're doing procedurally. Hold their feet to the fire and make them do it. There's no legal reason not to disclose everything.
Yeah, and again, remember, you know, the Presidential Records Act and other records, you know, the kinds of laws were passed after 1963. I mean, there are still documents about Cuba in Bobby Kennedy's files that have been withheld. They're still classified. They're sitting at the Kennedy Library. You know, in theory, the autopsy materials should never have been given, or ownership should never have been given to the family. Those were government autopsy records. But we deal with what we have to deal with. And interestingly, there was this massive Excel spreadsheet from March of 2017 purportedly indicating all the extant records. And there's nothing there from the Office of Naval Intelligence, for example.
And I can understand that, because Dad DD-214, when he went dark, was stripped of everything, and it was dated 11, his exit one, his last one was dated 11/23/1963. And all his theaters of where he worked, his records, his awards, everything was stripped off. So thank you for what you're doing and trying to do.
Joe, you have your hand up?
Yeah, the FBI, from the beginning, fought against release of things, fearing their confidential informants and whatnot. And the very first thing the review board did was to test how well the CIA and the FBI would work with them. And the first batch of documents they released were documents that actually they had already released.
Yes.
So the CIA was smart enough, they didn't fall for it, the FBI did.
Yeah.
So the FBI fought against documents that the FBI had already released, instinctively.
Yeah, and there's the Mary Farrell website has some of the documents from the ARB. There's a lot of documents from President Clinton that are not online that involve the ARB. There's about 100 boxes of ARB-related records at the Clinton Library only a portion of them are online, and that's going to be one of my trips. Because we can see the correspondence. I have legal memos going back and forth between the FBI and the ARB about arguing about whether records should be released. And yes, it was this smoke effort first. There were records already released that they were trying to claim privilege on, you know.
Yeah.
Mark, you got your hand up?
Okay, Mark, you're on mute. Make sure you unmute your mic.
I got it.
Okay.
Thanks, Larry, for the work you're doing. Simple question I had. Let's say the Department of Defense is withholding these documents and not cooperating. What is the punishment for a government agency? Do you go and arrest the... What do you do?
Our lawsuit against the president is to get a order from a court that ordering the agencies to comply with the requirements of the law. So their law requires, the JFK Records Act requires that the government identify on a document-by-document basis what the specific grounds are for postponement. As you can see from the memo of the Department of Defense, they gave another one of these blanket explanations. We're withholding these records, and these are the grounds, but they didn't do it document-by-document, and that's what they're supposed to do. Look, there may be some records that truly still impact national security, maybe in the sense that there could be a promise made to a government. Like, we had that example last year where there was a record that was released that had been held for 60 years about, it was a record from Australia. The information in the record itself, we knew about. It was about Oswald in Japan. Nothing in that memo was something we didn't already know. The reason it was withheld was because in 1960, whatever, the Australian government asked our government not to disclose that we, the CIA, had a listening station on Australian soil. And so they're making objections to having this document released while there's a TV show going on cable about our having a CIA station in Australia. So that's sort of the stupid shit, right? And who knows if, you know, so from the perspective of the government, that's preserving a relationship with Australia. And in their mind, that's national security. Now, whether the current Australian government didn't care anymore, but they're not making the effort. This is part of the whole problem about overclassification. And also, interestingly, I think what's going on with Trump in Florida is going to help us, because the Department of Justice is pushing back heavily on some of the assertions that President Trump's making. For example, President Trump said there was no enforcement mechanism in the Federal Records Act, and they're pushing back on that. And we actually have a Federal Records Act count in our complaint that we're going to file. So aside from the fact that NARA is in the news and the idea of classified records is in the news, some of the briefing, I've been closely watching the briefing because I want to see if there's anything that we can, you know, if the government's going to argue that in this case, then they're going to be, if they can't argue that against us then. So anyway.
Yeah, so the language of the JFK Records Act, too, is very strong, and it does not countenance vague, generalized, national security blanket objections. It doesn't count as that whatsoever. And so our position is going to be, listen, fine, if there's something that's required by national security to be withheld, just comply with the act by making an identification of the document sufficient to tell us what the act is. And there's, you know, this is where Rex and Larry and a couple of us have been working on, which is that the reader identification documents, that has not been complied with. And even something as quotidian as that would actually be quite a big help to somebody like Larry and MFF.
And we've also included NARA as a defendant because, again, their, and as Joe can explain, their records are a mess. You can see from that one exchange, there was a disagreement about what they even had. right? They saw there was a RIF number. And so the FBI claimed they gave them the document. Turns out all they had was their cover page. They didn't have any document underneath it. So their records are we are alleging that they themselves are in a violation of the Records Act, the Federal Records Act, by the way that they're mismanaging this collection, and that there needs to be more transparency here. This is inconsistent with what Congress asked. Congress wanted this to be purely transparent, so to put the questions about, you know, what the government knew about President Kennedy's assassination. So that's going to be filed. Our lawsuit's going to be filed, I think, Patrick, but we're aiming for the end of the month, right?
Yeah.
Have some news in, you know, and we're going to ask, we want people, if any of you have representatives that are sitting on the Homeland Committee, it would be great if you could contact them and ask them to have questions, to ask the archivist about things like, for example, the ARB recommended in its final report that Congress consider giving the National Archives the powers that the ARB had. ARB cannot overrule an agency request for with postponement. All they can do is make recommendations to the president. And as you've seen, the National Archives has caved every time these agencies have tried to postpone. You know, they're being obviously pressured to cave in, and they have relationships with these other people and other agencies. So we want the Homeland Committee to ask the archivist, the nominee, do you think you need more power? In addition, there are outstanding asks that the ARB made that remain outstanding 24 years later. And that, in my opinion, is a violation of the Federal Records Act, because NARA is a federal agency and they were responsible for collecting federal records. And there are searches that the agencies were asked to make and they are still not completed. So if any of you, I would ask you to go to the Senate's website, look for the Homeland Committee, which used to be the Senate Oversight Committee. See if one of your senators are sitting on that committee. If they are, then send them a note asking them to make sure that when they hold a hearing that they ask the nominee, number one, does she feel she needs any additional authority to properly administer the act? And number two, ask for a commitment to follow up on these outstanding requests.
Larry, who does the National Archives answer to? Is that person?
Executive branch.
Yeah, I mean, it's within the executive branch.
An overview on the legal action would be that you've got an act that's unanimously passed by the Senate and the House, if you can believe that, and then signed by a president who's the former head of the CIA, and all of them signed off on this. And so you have an act which is passed by the congressional branch and the executive branch, and it's not being enforced essentially by the executive branch. So we're going to the judicial branch of the government and saying, since these people have defaulted on their duties under the act, which are explicit and specific, therefore we're going to ask the judicial branch to step in and only ask for compliance with the law. That's all.
So Mark posted the names of the committee members. So the chairman is Gary Peters from Michigan. And then Tom Carper from Delaware, Margaret Kasson from New Hampshire, Kristen Sinema from Arizona, Jackie Rosen from Nevada, Alex Padilla from California, John Ossoff from Georgia, Rob Portman, the retiring senator from Ohio. The ranking member, in other words, the most senior Republican, is Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, Rand Paul from Kentucky, James Lankford from Oklahoma, Mitt Romney from Utah, Rick Scott from Florida, and Josh Hawley from Missouri. So if you live in one of those states, then one of your senators is sitting on that committee, and you should contact them.
And what is the name of this committee?
This is the Homeland and I think Government Reform Committee. I don't have the full name. Hold on a second.
Formerly the Senate Oversight Committee.
Yeah. Let's see. Where's my Senate JFK Records Act? Senate.
We can ask David.
Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. So, that's where we are. Stay tuned, and we may hopefully we'll have some more news. David, are we going to have an October meeting, or are we just going to wait till the conference in November?
No, I think we're going to have an October meeting. It will be after the first weekend because we'll be tied up with the Dealey Plaza UK conference. But I'm looking probably the second or third weekend because I want to do a last-minute push before we do the conference in November.
Okay.
We may even have one at the first week of November. So there's a possibility of having at least – definitely we're going to have one, if not possibly two, before November hits. I do want to ask you a quick question. On those ARB documents that are at the Clinton Library, are those available for are they classified? Are they able
they're just not online. So if you wanted to go look at them, you could.
Have they been digitized or have they just been hard copy?
Some of them are online, but there were like 100 boxes and there was only a couple boxes that were online.
You would think after all this time they, you know, could step up to the plate and digitize this shit and get it out there for us to be able to look at.
I suspect that ARB records are probably low on the priority list of things they're going to do, and they have a budget, you know.
Well, they need volunteers, you know, like, I don't know, Prodigy FK. We did Russell's collection, took us a year, but hey, what the hell.
You might want to contact them and see if they would like, if they would like your assistance.
Well, anything to, you know, I like getting the documents digitized because obviously you can read in the comments a while ago, you know, things happen and things get lost or damaged. Answer that question that Mike put up in the comments. Do you see it there in your chat log?
Let me see, Mike. When
WC7
collapse, number of records are lost. We're not. So I know there were photos of JFK, but I believe those were a private collection.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm not aware, well, with the understanding that there are outstanding searches that are still not being completed, you know, ostensibly the official position is that all the JFK records were searched and found and given to the archives, except those that are classified, some are with the archives, some are with agencies that own them. But we know for a fact that there are outstanding asks. So I'm not aware of any assassination records that were located in the World Trade Center that collapsed.
Okay, it's good to have an answer to that question of Mike's. I appreciate that, Larry.
I think the photographer's name was Jack Lowe. Does that ring a bell with anybody?
Yeah, I have that book in my office.
Oh, really?
It's a good book. But he had all the originals. He was JFK's official photographer for the family, too. Okay.
Yeah, I remember in those days, the Presidential Records Act wasn't adopted yet. So there's a lot of things that are in the Kennedy Library that should be considered government records. And we really got to get Bobby Kennedy's Cuba materials, declassified. And again, and the other theme about this, in addition to what's going on in Trump, is the whole problem of overclassification, right? So these are fitting in the themes. I always try to make things relevant to today's times because of how long ago the Kennedy assassination was.
The Presidential Records Act was in reaction to Nixon trying to take the Watergate tapes.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's 73.
And Congress...
74.
Actually, I think the act was passed under Carter in 78. If I recall correctly, I think Carter signed it into law, but it was definitely
well, like an updated version maybe, but I think it was 74.
You know, the Department of Justice was supposed to use a good faith effort to unseal, records that were sealed by courts that are assassination records. And I don't think that they have complied with that sense of Congress with respect to Carlos Marcelo's alleged assassination, confession. Those records are still sealed, and that's another thing we want to try to get unsealed, which I'd ask the Oversight Committee to look into.
Well, definitely, Larry, thank you for the update, and I want to point this out here. If you go to ProdigyFK.com, click on the blog section. Larry Snapp has his section there on our website, and you can download different PDFs or docs, different formats that are available. And if you can't open it, you can always download it and convert a file to whatever you're most happy in reading. These are the easiest ones to upload to our website, and most majority are able to view the documents that Larry provides. I'm sure that I have a few that I've not gotten up there, but
I haven't sent you the batch I got at the beginning of the month. I will say that Phil Sheenan is very interested in this topic. He's particularly offended by the way NARA operated, so I'm in kind of complication with him. And then there is this congressman in Tennessee, Steve Jacobs, who is really fired up about the JFK Act. He has written two letters to President Biden, one urging him to release the records. He had six other people from the House signed it, and then went after the president postponed the records this January, he wrote a letter to the president asking for a meeting to discuss this. I've been keeping him, it's Cohen, Steve Cohen, not Jacobs. Maybe he's in the Jacob tribe. I don't know. So anyway, I'm keeping him in the loop as well. And if any of you live in Tennessee and he's your congressman, I would stay in touch with him as well, because he's the man in the House that's interested in this topic.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry, for everything that you're doing and keeping us informed of what's going on in your world, which all of us, obviously it goes on in our world as well, but you're the one that's leading the fight, as an attorney to do the hard work of getting, them to, as Sean said, well, go hold their feet to the fire and get them to actually play ball. So.
Well, I want to say, I'm not doing this myself. Patrick is helping, Bill Simpich, Mark Zdamczyk and Andrew Iller, from Canada. So, we have a group of lawyers that are using our collective wisdom to try to do something about this.
Well, thank you to you and to all of them for the hard work that you continue doing for us.
Hey, Dave, let me jump in here real quick.
Go ahead, Casey.
Larry, this is Casey Quinlan. I wanted to point out again for our viewers and the people who are in here, just how important it is for people like Larry Schnapp, and I know I'm going to miss some people, but you named some of them, Joe Backus, Bart Camp, Rex Bradford, Bill Simpich, and I know several other people that I'm going to miss, but it is extremely important, the work that you guys do, because we're 59 years into this. And for God's sake, if they put another 10 years or another 100 years on this and they actually back it up, hell, none of us will probably be here watching each other doing what we'd like to do. But, somebody has to do this. Somebody has to get a start in this thing, or at least to the point where hopefully other people can carry this on. But at the same time, I just want to tell you how important your work is for us researchers who actually get access to this material and then try to decipher it and then pass it on down the line to individuals, not only hopefully in classrooms, but in real life, that things like this really work. and that is using the rule of law. And I got off her rule of law for the last 2 years for damn much, and I'm sitting there going, okay, I just got to get a hold of Larry Schnapp because I know what the rule of law is now. So, but anyway, thank you. Thank you, you know, for what you guys are doing.
And I want to, and look, we're just the lawyers. It's people like Joe and Rex who are the experts. And, you know, you guys spent a good part of your life learning what's there and what's not there. And we could not do this kind of work without your help. And I know at times I'll send Joe an email late at night and say, I need this the next day or so. And he gets all frustrated with me. And that's Joe's personality anyway. But you know.
Sorry.
But we can't do this without the help of the experts. You guys, you're like our expert witnesses. We're the talking heads. We put the law together and we make our argument, but we can't make it. You guys help us substantiate what the violations are. And so and one of the reasons I'm sharing this with, you know, we share this with you is if any of you guys, and I'm throwing Bob Saltzman in there because Bob Saltzman is from Generation 1.5, or I know he doesn't like to be called Generation 1. But, you know, you guys have the expertise and you help us direct our legal tools. You basically help us aim the cannon in the right way. You have the ammunition and we're just aiming the cannon. So I just want to give another shout out to Joe and the Rex, because I know I've been being a little persistent pain in the neck giving these spreadsheets, and that Joe has to go through, you know, dozens of pages that he's already done before, and he feels like he's doing busy work. But it's not busy work. It's really important. I just got 4 emails from Joe as we've been talking. So I just want to make sure that he gets the proper appreciation as well, because without his help and Rex's help, we wouldn't be where we are.
Absolutely. And I wanted to point out to you that you said that there were at least 60 years of files that are still closed in a lot of your mafia cases. If that's the case, maybe we ought to just go drain Lake Mead, and maybe we can find some more damn bodies down there. And who knows who in the hell's down there?
Well, you know, it ain't the bodies that are the problem. We know that Hoover had a problem with the ponies and the mafia, particularly the mafias in New York. They helped fix races for him. And he wasn't going to prosecute the mob. I mean, at least at that period of time for that particular issue. So, anyway, there's 6,000 records of the FBI that are being held back under the law enforcement grounds, and I don't know of any active law enforcement activity going on with these dead people. So, I could be wrong. Maybe it's something I don't know about.
Again, Larry, thank you, and thank all you guys who are doing this work, because it sets the structure and basis for a lot of the programs that are online right now, and especially our program that's online.
And the important thing, this is stuff that's not at NARA. I mean, the information that I'm getting, just like happened in the old days when Harold Weisberg would get records released to him, you know, he had to give them to NARA to be put in the collection. They would not normally be part of the collection. So when people request documents from an agency and the agency complies with it and gives them records, they don't at the same time then say, oh, we have to give this to NARA. That's not the way they think. So having these posted on your website, David, is also important, because this is the only place that they're publicly available, these memos that I'm getting.
Well, there's another place people should think about with the Mary Farrell Foundation. Just Google CIA CREST, CREST, like the toothpaste. There's another database. That's the CIA database, and they have some JFK assassination documents in there. They do not have RIFs. It's a completely separate system. Just Google CIA and CREST, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
But Joe, how do we know that those documents then are in the collection?
They're not in the JFK collection.
How did that work? All right, you know what? We can talk offline. I don't
want
to hold up anymore. But that's bizarre that those – how could they have segregated records and not be part of the collection?
And I just wanted to point out, and I think I may have done this before, but I just want to point out again that Larry Hancock told me, you know, I kept asking him, I said, if where do you get all your information? Like, you're not getting it from the documents here, because I said, I can't find some of this online. And he says, Justice Department. He says, I go to the Justice Department file. And I said, for God's sake, I've been beating the heck out of the FBI, CIA, you know, anything that I possibly could. I said, I never thought of Justice Department.
Well,
but apparently, yeah.
FBI, DTF, FBI, ATF, DEA are all agencies of the Department of Justice. They all have records, and they all have records that have been withheld. So ATF is, you know, alcohol,
tobacco and firearms,
right? And so there were some interesting interactions over there. You got the DEA, drug enforcement. And you got the FBI, so there's, and Department of Justice also has the records of, you know, the Marcello and, you know, the Mafia, and so there's a lot of records at Department of Justice.
And I think you also have to ask specifically, like anything else, which agency under that umbrella, that you would like to see.
Yeah.
And like anything else, Joe, I know you know this about asking for a certain copy of something before you even get to that particular point, even though you may not know what you're looking for to begin with.
Well, that's why you ask. So they're all in silos. And so, you know, each of the agencies or bureaus, whatever, they each have their FOIA officer. So if you just send a letter to the Department of Justice and say, give me all your Kennedy records, you know, who knows what they're going to look at, but if you say all your records that are in, you know, department, the drug DEA or ATF, then they'll send that to ATF and DEA and they'll pull it up. But the broader you make it, or the more ambiguous you make it, the less of a response you're going to get.
Right. And I think ATF used to be ATTD, which was an acronym prior to that, but that's what I understand.
I mean, you know, I have probably read the our final report half a dozen times in the last year and a half. It is such a great report. Every time you read it, you know, I read it for a different reason. I'm looking for a particular issue. But there's so much information packed in there that it's really worth reviewing it periodically to see if what you're looking at is addressed by them. I mean, they have wonderful memos. Just there's a story behind that final report that is available. And a lot of the stuff is on Mary Farrell. But you can see their interpretations of the statute, their interactions with the various agencies. I mean, they did a wonderful job. I mean, given the constraints they had, even without those constraints, they did a great job, and they ran out, and, you know, the clock was run out on them. Anyway, okay. I've taken up enough time.
Well, thank you, Larry. I would like to take a quick second and throw a shout out to Craig Bozarth. He's in our group right now. And Craig is the man that, he does a lot of things, but in particular, he does the transcripting of our spotlight, and he's working on the ONI conference that we had back in April. Well, Craig came into town on Tuesday, and we went out and had dinner together, and I just want to shout out to Craig and say thank you again for stopping by and seeing us. It's always nice to get a chance to have a in-person meet and greet with people that, you know, takes place in our show and also in the work that we do. So thank you again, Craig, for the dinner. We went out to Texas Roadhouse, and I got to tell you, it's nice to have a steak finally. I'd had one about a year and a half, so.
Oh, it's good to have an excuse.
You know what? It's always, yeah, you're absolutely right on that.
And just Casey, thank you too. Appreciate that, and appreciate the time that you're putting into this program for us.
And I'd like to let everybody know, in case you're kind of going through the list of who's in the room and who's not. Brian Edwards is not with us today. He had a couple appointments and some landscaping he had to get done. So he's, you know, still working on his new house. But Brian should be back for our next meeting. I want to take and shift gears here and talk to, let's see here, Larry, are you, Larry Rivera, are you in your, yeah, there you are. Hey, I want to give you a quick update. I've I told you that I was working on trying to get the Harper fragments 3D printed. Well, the guy that I was working with, I understand, you know, people have other commitments. They have time and family they need to spend and work and so on. Well, hell, all of us do. But I went out this past week and got a 3D printer, and I've been just learning the curve, so to speak, and it's a whole lot easier than what the hell I thought it was going to be. So I am going to try in the next probably 7 to 10 days after some more tinkering with the printer and try to get the Harper fragments printed. And hopefully I'll have one by November so that way I can actually, you know, give you what I've got going with it.
In case you need to do, like, maybe some TeamViewer stuff, we can do that, you know, and I can, you know, see if it can be produced straight out of the Blender program, you know?
Yeah, I'm using a program called Cura, which is a lot of people online said it was the easiest way. It's the easiest program to use to take a Blender file and convert it into a program, or to slice it and put it into.
It's got to turn it into a usable mesh.
Right.
That can be interpreted by whichever program is going to print it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I need to figure out how to take the Blender image and turn it into a G code. The program that my printer prints in is called G code.
Yeah.
And if I can get, maybe if you get a chance to tinker with the.
Port it over. I have to port it over to another, protocol. Yeah. We can try to do that. Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I think it would be, you know, like I said, I mean, I know he was having a lot of attempts that were failing at it, and I said, well, is it, and I think what the whole point was is he wasn't keen on, and he knew everything about printing, but when it came to using Blender, you know, to build something compared to what he would use it for, I want to take it right off the Blender image because it's the best three-dimensional that I've seen. Ever. So to add one more thing to your plate, Larry, we gotta convert the file over to a G code, and that way we can get it printed and see what it looks like.
Here's the thing, okay? The Harper fragment, in order to model it the way it is, since the way that it was, you know, expelled from the skull, it's almost in two different portions, you know? The inner and outer, and they overlap. And if you look, and if you didn't ask any pathologist or whatever, you know, this type of configuration is very special. So in order to duplicate it, you have to actually do one side and the other and then bring them together, you know, and that's where, you know, probably there might be some inconsistencies in the mesh, you know, which are translating to the porting out to the other printing format. And that might be the problem. That's where we would have to work on it. I have tried to model it, you know, in other ways, but it's just impossible. The only way is to do it in two sections and then bring them back, fuse them together, merge them, if you will. And until somebody with a little bit more expertise than me, you know, can figure it out, we're going to have to just work with that.
Okay, well, yeah. Hell, nothing else. We'll print the two different portions and then put it together. Mm-hmm. I want to at least see what we can do. And like I say, we'll try it in the two piece part, and then you know, plastic weld those together, so we can actually have a total three dimensional object.
That could be an option, but it would be best to just try to clean up the mesh and do it all in one piece. Let me see what, because I remember trying to do that years ago, and the company that I sent the mesh to, they were telling me that they were having problems, you know, porting it over to their format to use in the, you know, in their printer. But so many years have gone by now, we might be able to, you know, reestablish that and revisit that and do it, you know. So well, we can you know, whichever way you want to do it. I wanted to make a quick comment on this FBI thing, because about the availability and how they have stonewalled documents. And that's the exact experience that I have had. For example, I'm supposed to do a presentation in November for an hour on the new documents, and I've done a top 10, all right? Well, guess what? In the top 10, there's not a single FBI document that I can say, hey, you know, this is brand new. This, what does this bring to the table, you know, as far as the interpretation or new information that can be, you know, expanded off of that one document. On the other hand, the CIA, you know, the top 10 is already filled, you know. And for example, you know, the Northwoods, and you've got the McCone diary, and you've got so many, Sylvia Duran, you know, the CIA just completely lost, you know, the her statement, you know, and they admitted to, you know, the letter, you know, from the ARB to the ARB from the CIA said, look, we're being honest here. We dropped the ball on this. This document does not exist, period. We have tried to find it for you guys. It's not there. FBI is not going to do that at all, you know, and we can start with the Oswald passport that I spoke about last month that is in files at the Dallas Police Department, but is not in any of the FBI records. I'm talking about the one that he renewed on the 24th in June in New Orleans, and the one that he never used in the tourist card applications that he had to supposedly go to Mexico. All right. Now that passport, and I was just telling you guys, you know, I showed it last time, you know, just a very, very, it's not a, it's just a picture, you know, that they held up the passport like this, took a picture, and they filed it, you know. Where is that original? Where is that document? The FBI signed off on it, you know, Warren DeBrew, you know, and talking about DeBrew, you know, you've got, I've been looking for the other 36 pages of the October the 25th, the 1963 memo, which brings up so much more information into Lee Oswald in New Orleans and in Dallas, and you won't find that anywhere. Only the first four pages, you don't have, the other 36 pages are non-existent. That is an FBI document. So that's, you know, when you guys were talking about the FBI, the Stonewall, and you were not going to get anything from them, you better believe it, you know. And like I said, you know, there are, the CIA is way head and shoulders above them, you know, as far as document releases.
Larry, can I ask you a question? Maybe we need to talk offline. But when I was 17, Dad taught me how to process film in his photo lab at City Hall right underneath where Ruby shot Oswald. He first worked in the Dallas Police Department, was planted there, and then he was photo chief in the Dallas Fire Department. When the House Select Committee of Assassination came in, he was the person who pulled the Dallas Police Department files to make photo prints of those for the HSCA. He asked to make an extra set. He gave me 8 of those, and I spent the night before last with Judith, and she said some of these have never been seen. I don't know. I'm not researched enough. Is this something, the scans I've got of these 8 photographs, including the arrest of Oswald, can I send those to you to tell me if they're public or not?
Larry? Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, they can be scanned and emailed, of course.
Okay, I've got these, and on the initial charge for Oswald, because Lee was on Dad's team, it says he was charged with involuntary murder on the initial police report. Have you ever seen that arrest record?
Involuntary? No.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I don't have your current contact information. I'll get it from David Knight, and I'll rescan these photo prints in. They're 8x10 black and white, and I need you to take a look at them because I processed them with my dad myself from the police records.
Sure. What is that involuntary manslaughter, a murder or manslaughter, what document, is that from
the arrest record from the Dallas Police Department.
That's a DPD document.
Is that a charging document?
You understand, I didn't get these from the FBI. These were, Dad pulled the wallet, the cards in the wallet, the negatives, everything. We made new, fresh prints for the House Select Committee on Assassination. These are extra copies of those prints on about 9 items.
But this is a charging document?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So when we get done here, you've got my number, right?
I think I do, but I've never released these to anybody. I was scared to even have them for years, and then I find out once Dad dies, a lot of this is over at the University of North Texas, and I'm like, they're digital. Wait, I have original photo prints that have never been digitized.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, and I'm putting in here in the chat, I'm sending you a direct message.
Okay.
Yeah, get with me right after, and yeah, I wanna take a look at these.
Okay. I'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, I just sent you a direct message, so if you want to write that down.
I have a question for you. Was okay. The Alex Heidel in the original records, was the photo
taken? Yeah. I got these things. I showed Judith on my phone, and yes, it had his Marine card that had the name Alex Heidel on it. Everything that was in the wallet, we laid down. We made a new negative and made an 8x10 photo print for those.
Do you still have the negatives or just the prints?
Just the 8x10 photo prints.
Because the negatives, those went to the HSDA, right?
Right. Dad had us, he said, can I please make a set of this gun, the cards, the arrest record of Oswald, and I've got them.
Okay.
Did you take a photo of the wallet itself?
I don't think so. Just the cards that were in it. I remember when we had to put on the gloves in the photo lab with a little red light on the clock and take them out with gloves on because it was still in chain of custody of events and lay them down. He was teaching me how to make black and white prints because I was the yearbook editor at my high school at Samuel, and he was teaching me how to do this. He also taught me how to splash pictures to make new negatives out of two different pictures, and he showed me how to cut an X-Acto knife, and as the head of photo fire chief photography, we took a picture of a house burning, and later on the firefighters were on the front lawn. He said, this is how the Oswald thing was done, and it looks like the firefighters are sitting on the front lawn while the house is burning. He showed me how to make a new negative print from two different pictures.
Yeah, I'd love to look at that.
Okay. I'll get those to David. David, you get them to who you need to get them to.
Okay, absolutely, I will.
Thank
okay.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Shauna, this is Casey. How you doing?
Fine. Well, actually, I got to have 3 vertebrae replaced in my neck on October 26th.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you what, I think we got a couple of doctors online here that might be able to handle that. But
you know,
and a couple lawyers that would take you up on that. But anyway,
I want to get this out before my surgery in case something happens. You know, I'm already dealing with drones over my house. It's May, so I am talking. I'm spreading sunshine, whatever it takes, whatever I have. I need to get out there to you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And I was just wondering if it's possible after we look at these, is it possible for us with your permission to put those online, or do you want us just to hold them until? Do you get permission?
No, because I was told by someone in D.C. to lay low until Jack Ross' book comes out in November. It has a chapter on my dad's life and me and how I found out he was involved in. And I was told not to get out my dad's book that he started that I'm finishing till after the midterms to wait till November. And the guy that called me said, well, just don't dance around it. Tell me what you mean. He said, I'm trying to save your pretty little neck. And I said, well, you don't have to tell me that twice. So I get off the phone with him, and I'm like, I'm going to start sounding like a mockingbird. That's my only protection.
Right.
I got to talk.
Yep.
And I appreciate what you guys are doing. David, Casey, you know, all you guys, Larry, you know, I have deep respect for you. You spent decades into this, and I was taught not to look into it or, you know, that's it. And I'm not scared anymore. I see the investment you have in – what kid grows up with a piece of bulletproof glass behind their dresser and mother pulls it out from behind my bed this summer? You know, it's just all kinds of crazy things. I'll tell you stories offline, something I can't say here, but I need to know what to do with classified documents. If they're classified and you're not supposed to have them, what are you supposed to do with them?
Take them down to Mar-a-Lago and put them in a box down there. And then...
Damn it, Casey.
I'm kidding, but you know what? Somebody asked me the other day, they go, well, you're doing research on the murder of JFK. They said, do you think any of those boxes that are in Mar-a-Lago have Kennedy files? And I said, well, if they did, I'd have to get a hold of Larry Schnapp. he'd know what to do with them.
And I don't know if this is before they had marked things. It's just type restricted or not for release without Chief of Naval Operations, stuff like that. You know, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, you know,
it's not at my house. It's in many different places now.
Do you know if the records that you have subsequently been declassified? Because you have copies of records, right?
Well, I had some originals, the Guam Gallows hangings in after World War II. It's not the narrative that the American government gave the world. And I find things like that. I'm still going through Dad's documents and letters when I go where they are and visit them. And it says restricted. I don't know if they're restricted still or not. When the congressman and I called the Dallas FBI office, they said, oh, anything your dad was involved in 50 years ago is declassified. And I said, I don't think so. And I tried calling Naval Intelligence to return things right after he died. They said they didn't care about anything. Just mail them. You can't mail this kind of crap. I have no one sit down with me other than Gordon Ferry to tell me what can't be talked about or what should or shouldn't be in the book. And I don't know who can guide me on this stuff.
Well, you probably need, there are people that specialize in information law, but we can talk offline if you want.
Yes, sir.
I think a lot of what you have is probably being declassified by way of executive order or there is a 50-year rule. So these were restricted. They're not, you know, top secret. They're restricted, which I think is a lower level of classification.
I don't, according to a PBS special, MacArthur was the only one there with the hanging of the Japanese generals, and I got the list of 43 people where they were, make-believe drivers, and the list of the executioners that's never been released to the public.
I'm sure some historian would love to get that.
What I'd like to know is the documents that you have, you know, what we have, if they have been released, which, you know, Larry's saying that they probably have been, or declassified, I wonder if the copies you have maybe don't have some of the, you know, blacked out sections.
I don't think I have a lot, okay? But
yeah.
What I have may fit some narrative somewhere for more sunshine.
Right.
You know, I don't know because here's what I've done. I've only watched the JFK movie once. Dad scared me not to study this. And so when this comes out, I apologize. I've not read y'all's material and books. I've only been to a couple of conferences because I want his stuff to be raw and pure and not slanted by anything else I've heard. Once it's out, then I'll look into all of it. But I've got, you know, 400 letters home. Aunt Ruby Houston was OSS with R.L. Thornton at Mercantile Bank.
But say that again. Who?
My aunt Ruby Houston was an OSS operative at Mercantile National Bank for R.L. Thornton, and I knew her, and I worked there in high school. She worked there 50 years. And Dad, when he left Dealey Plaza, went immediately to down Garland Road to First National Bank, where his cousin Jesse Ray Houston worked, and I think that was both of their gateways into the CIA in 1947-48. Because I've got the documents offline proving that Aunt Ruby was a member of the OSS. I don't know the web of how it all fits, but I'll get y'all what I've got, the materials that I can, start feeding it to David and let him sift through it and distribute it where it needs to go. Because I'm not going to get the book finished till next year, and with the surgery coming up, I just need to get some things in y'all's hands.
No, and I appreciate that, Shauna.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Speaking of appreciating, I want to do a quick share here real fast. If you go to the ProjectJFK.com website, which we have the Help Our Cause section, it's not just a boys club. We have our first female that has donated to our cause, and that happens to be Shauna Willis. I want to reach out and say thank you to her. And to
thank
you. On our list that not only make a one-time donation, we've got several people that make monthly donations to us. You know,
well, believe me, once I get this book out, I'm going to be donating a lot more to your cause. You know, I love America. Dad loved America, and we need truth and transparency and sunshine because it is relative to today. It is highly relative to today.
If anybody that you know has donated, wants to donate again, or for somebody that's watching our video on YouTube, posted, you can always click on the donate now button, securely donate through PayPal. And of course, what we use the funds for is to, one, keep the lights on, and two, to continue going with the efforts that we have at ProjectGFK.com. And that's doing our shows, helping with the conferences, you know, equipment, materials, you know, storage obviously is a costly thing for us. And it's to make sure that everything is protected and kept in the vaults that anybody can look at, you know, both digitally and, you know, we have some things I'm trying to get into on the physical aspect. And of course that's going to be another, you know, another cost to us about, you know, actually having things housed, where people are getting a hold of us to, you know, basically take over the, their collection and to house it, for future generations. And I want to also throw this out. You know, I look on analytics on our YouTube channel. You know, I want to be able to, we say this a lot. We want to get the younger generation involved. It's not just about the group of people that's, you know, our age groups and, you know, the ones that attend our shows monthly and our conferences yearly. But you know, it's also once we have, you know, shuffled off this planet, you know, is this case going to die with us? Are we going to be able to get it into, you know, the younger generation? Now, of course, back when Casey was teaching in school, you know, when I up before the pandemic, I was going out and speaking at local junior highs and high schools. But you know, we want to reach out to the younger generation. So I know there's a young guy in his early 20s. His name escapes me at the moment, but I'm going to reach out to him. He's doing a collection with a podcast. I'm sure he's reached out to a few of you guys that are in the audience. You know, it's people that's in the younger generation than, you know, what we are, just because it happened in the last, you know, century, you know, it's before 2000, and anybody that was born from 2000 on up in the last 22, almost 23 years now, you know, this is like, you know, a dead topic to them, especially what they're getting taught in school compared to what, you know, Casey was teaching in school back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So we've got to get them in on it too.
But JFK is the next generation, but World War One was the Casey and my generation. And the further complication is, at least when Casey and I were young, it was the same century. The current generation feels like anything that happened in the 20th century is, you know, they don't have to worry about.
Was that young guy's name Robbie Robertson, David?
I just watched
a thing with Bart Camp and him, and he's a young guy that's doing shows, podcasts on the Kennedy assassination.
Well, I believe his show is called Into the Blank.
Yeah, okay.
That's who I'm talking about. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to reach out to him, and if he's seeing this now, I'm going to reach out to him this week and see about setting up.
He's doing a show with Bart like August 22nd of this year, so I know he's doing it here in the near past. So.
Well, yeah. Hey, Dave, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I did a podcast with him several prominent JFK people. He's a smart kid. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to be very aggressive. He wants to actually put a documentary together. He's not just been interviewing folks associated with conspiracy. I mean, he's interviewed Dale Myers and Posner, and he's tried to, you know, take those guys on. I'm, you know, I've warned him about that, you know, that might, how that may be counterproductive, but he's dug into documents and things. He's done a lot of work in a short period of time, but yes, he has interviewed quite a few people associated with the case. His name is Robbie Robertson. That's correct. It's called.
For those of you guys who don't know, this is David Denton, and David is putting on the conference down in Dallas. It's going to be a number one conference. So, just wanted to let you know who he is.
Yeah, and with that,
that's me.
I want to turn this over to David. Now that he's on with us, I gave a quick update of you know, when we first started, but go ahead and go ahead and give us a lowdown on the conference, David, and also some updates. Why don't you list the speakers for me of who's all going to be participating?
Well, I don't have the list in front of me. I'll try to go off the top of my head, but it is a really good lineup, I think. And I just want to, you know, say a couple things. I mean, first of all, you know, Dave right here, Dave Knight's been a kind of a toll director with me, I would say, in terms of trying to put this thing together, and got a lot of good help from him. His technical expertise, his knowledge about running conferences, has been invaluable. We're off to a good start. We're hoping to continue in terms of encouraging people to sign up and be at the conference. And we're going to keep pushing on different social networks and different ways and avenues to get people there, get them involved. It's a bit of an unknown when we obviously have not really had an opportunity to come to Dallas like folks have liked to for a couple of years. Now is there the opportunity, and we hope we'll see a good group there.
But hey, Dave, let me just read through the names real quick. It's on the JFKHistorical.com website. This is the schedule I'm reading off of. You've got Judith Baker, David Denton, Casey Quinlan, Robert Groden, Mal Hyman, Ryan Jones, Larry Rivera, Brian Edwards, Phil Nelson, Pete Hymans. You've got the panel of Coup in Dallas with Leslie Sharp, Alan Kent, Gary Shaw, and Casey Quinlan. Gary Shaw is going to be our closer on Friday night. We've got Randy Benson, Larry again, Gary Fannin, Vince Palomara, Jack Roth, Judith, myself. We've got Mike Chester, John Barber, Ed Catro. We've got a lineup that is going to hit it out of the park. I mean, you're going to have, you know, a little bit of something from everybody that is going to interest you. We're going to be talking about JFK, RFK, MLK. We're going to be doing some stuff on Malcolm X. So it's going to be it's going to be something that you're going to want to be part of. I did let people know that, of course, we want people to come out in person to the conference, but later, probably in the next 7 to 10 days, we will be announcing the portion that's going to be on Zoom. I know some won't be able to show up in person. But, you know, we want to make sure that we make this global. So anybody that's in another state, another country, can make a contribution of attending the conference. I know, I'm going to have Neil Safferty up here in just a minute to talk to us about the conference that's going on October 1st and 2nd with DeWitt Plaza UK. I know because of time difference, you know, it'll be an opportunity to have, people across the pond, across the globe, to join us. So I just want to throw that out there. Go ahead, Dave, take it away.
Yeah, you know, it's good in a couple ways. We've got recognizable faces there, people maybe heard poor, good speakers, yet I still think there'll be a mix of the new as well. And even some of our speakers that maybe you've seen before have new material, new things they're looking at. You know, hopefully Larry Rivera is still here. I mean, Larry's done some research on the Malcolm X situation. We know what things have come to light in the last year.
Another political assassination, and definitely by the CIA.
And we're going to give Larry like two sessions to go over that to basically educate our folks. I mean, that alone should be something new that folks should be interested in. And Jack Roth is another name you may not be familiar with, but Jack has just spent a lot of time. Involved in some documentaries in the past. He has spent a lot of time putting a book together, I think, for Skyhorse, called Killing Kennedy, where he just basically went through and really got some interviews and information from different experts on the case, and really. Nice guy. I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got to say. He'll be appearing in Dallas for the first time.
Fortunate title, by the way, since that's the same title as Riley's.
I know. I told him to check, and he realized that's the same title as the O'Reilly book. I hope I'm sure they will. They will differentiate it. But, yeah, it struck me too, Larry, but I'm sure I'm sure it will be a better book than
the
book. Okay. But, yeah, so, you know, we're excited about it. It's a great chance to, you know, one of the best things about the conference and the chance to attend live is the camaraderie, though, just the chance to get together with like-minded people, chance to talk, converse. Ed Tatro, one of the best researchers in the country, will be our keynote speaker. And Ed's got new stuff. It's always fresh with Ed. It's always something that he's dug into or a different perspective. And I'm sure he'll be delivering an excellent presentation. And then we've got Ryan Jones on one of our luncheons, who's outstanding from the King Memorial site. And he has got his hands on some new documents turned over to him by the King family with the Ray trial. And I believe it's the civil trial. I'm not sure. I need to get that clarified with Ryan. But he said it's stuff folks haven't seen before. Stuff is passed along to him by the King family. He's going to be talking about that. So, you know, if you're on the fence, and I'm just trying to pique your interest, it's going to be a great weekend. Sure hope you guys can join us, see us there, either possibly live. If you can't make it live, you know, we're going to have an outstanding Zoom aspect too, you know, with Dave kind of running all the video technical stuff. It's going to be a well-run operation from that end as well. So please consider jfkhistoricalgroup.com. You can go in and sign up. I'm sure Dave's put that out there. And hope to see you there, folks. Anybody that's, like I say, on the fence, please try to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank you again, Dave, for putting this on and hosting it. And being the man in charge. I've enjoyed being the co-captain with you on it. It does take a village of people to pull something like this off, and it's been a pleasure working with you. And I think we're going to have a hell of a conference. It's something that we can look at. Like I say, we're going to be pushing the 60th anniversary conference next year. So I'm hoping that what we do this year will definitely set us up for next year. And we'll have even more people in Dealey and at our conference next year. You would think that with what we were talking about earlier, and I know you weren't in the room, but with the records release and things of having different committees and commissions out there, we would have had an answer by now. But it's not what's transpired. So that's why we've dedicated our lives to doing what we've done and what we continue to do. And hopefully we can get the younger crowd to come out. I know you're going to have a few college kids with you, and hopefully we can get some college and high school kids. If nothing else, if they can't show up in person, they can at least come to the event through Zoom. So I want to put that call to arms, so to speak, to anybody that's watching this. If you know somebody that has an interest in history or should have an interest in history, I think all younger generations should have a interest in history, because if you can't understand what took place in the 1963 assassination of JFK, you sure as hell can't understand what's taking place today. It was not just a one-off. I mean, if you look at the 1960s, you look at, if you just, you look up, the internet and type in assassinations took place in the 1960s. There's a reason why I refer to it as the turbulent 60s. It's not just the top four we're talking about in the November conference. There's a lot of assassinations and murders that took place back in the 60s, and it helped shape the 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way into where we're at today. So if you want to see when we lost our innocence, not only as a nation but as a world, with the death of JFK, you want to take part in this conference, and you want to take part in, what Pride of JFK and also JFK Historical Group is doing by putting on conferences in Dallas, global virtual conferences, and also what we do here on a monthly basis with the Journey. So, I think it'll be a great thing for us to do. I'm excited about being back in person again. And
Dave, just make a couple points.
Sure.
Dave Knight right here is going to be another guy that's going to present something I'm really looking forward to, on Jimmy Hoffa, that he's been working for a couple years, right, Dave, on the research.
About 3 years.
All that. I'm, I'm excited about what he's going to be bringing out with that. And, you know, and then our own Casey Quinlan, who's done tons of work, you know, he's continuing along his track and the panel discussion from Coolin Dallas, we just put in kind of late to the program with a couple researchers that are really good, you know, that you want to hear from, Wesley Sharp and Alan Kent. I don't know if either one of them made any really public appearances till this point yet. I mean, they're the folks that are kind of, for a number of reasons, I don't know how you say it, maybe just reluctant to do that sort of thing. And but they're very good researchers. And so we're excited about that panel discussion. Gary Shaw's being part of that as well. So there's a lot of things to look forward to. We're really excited about it.
Absolutely. Well, with that, one, I've got Neil Stapke that would like to ask Shauna a question, and then I want to have Neil tell us about the Dealey Plaza UK conference that's coming up the weekend of October 1st and 2nd. So, Neil, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. I finished dinner. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you got something to eat. I'll be grabbing a bite myself when this is over with. But yeah, go ahead with your question to Shauna, and then let us know about the lowdown on the Dealey Plaza UK conference.
Yeah, thank
you. All ears, Neil.
So Shauna, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with you. That this is the first time I think I've seen you on the Zoom, but I might be wrong. I just did a quick Google, there was a site that came up, a guy called Ralph Thomas. If you look at that site, there is a suggestion here that your father was a photographer and he'd be behind the picket fence. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, he was. I used to go with him on his trips to Love Field when he had briefcases handcuffed to his wrists. And the closest he came to getting caught was the aerial film canisters. I should backtrack. Next March, I plan on going with Gary Powers Jr. to a spy tour of Germany. My father set up the YouTube cameras for the Navy's spy plane. That's why I was born in the Naval Air Station base in Jacksonville. He was in an airplane crash in the Antarctic. That's also well documented, 2 days after getting down there before they built McMurdo Sound. But Dad's expertise was Master Chief, United States Navy, photo intelligence. He was Admiral Byrd's photographer in the Antarctic. He was on the Enterprise with McCain when we found out Russia was still in Cuban waters and we were still there in the spring of 63. They made a mad dash to the Gibraltar Straits and to intercept some Russian frigates, and his back went out in Greece. They flew him back to Bethesda, where he had a lot of experience filming as well as still photography. I've got 26 pages of all his skills, and he was down there that day filming. At first they thought it was a mission to strengthen the security for the president. There were three teams and no one team knew what the other team was doing. And sometimes you had backups for your assignment if you got whacked or chickened out. And when he found out what was going on, one person on his team committed suicide that week. Another one went crazy and they told Dad, if you don't finish what we've assigned you, we're going to kill you, your wife, your kids, and your grandparents. So he immediately went to my granddad, who did a will on October 31st. We landed in Dallas November 4th from Florida. We had a house set up 7 miles from downtown. And he was filming, and he told me where he went, but I've not got any pictures of him down there. I have one picture somebody sent me last year from Brazil of taken from behind the grassy knoll that someone took of the shooter. We're still analyzing that picture of this man holding a rifle. Dad was terrified. He didn't talk about this for years. And I asked him why he got to live and so many others died. And he said I had a usable skill. He processed a lot of aerial film over Vietnam, processed the moon landing film. Some of the men he trained in the Navy, like Chaffee, went on to be astronauts, and he knew how to keep his mouth shut. And when he found out that I knew, I had been listening and taking notes and recording, he was terrified. But before his death, he wrote a letter to me to finish what he started in his book, all his documents and said, tell my story, please finish what I've started. I got pictures of his car down there. I can't find it. It's a 1957, I want to find it down there. It's a 1957 Fantail Dodge two-tone Corrupt Coronet, and it was gold and white. And I got pictures of what he looked like back then. And I gave all this to Ralph Thomas. I said, please find him. And all these Richard searchers out there, find the family car, find him. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to do it.
That's an incredible story. I mean, wow. He was taking still photography behind the picket fence.
Film.
At the point of the assassination or prior?
He was involved before, during, and after. The canisters of aerial film were about the size of oatmeal boxes. I thought they were little bitty 35-millimeter canisters. And the fall after my dad died, my son went up in the barn and found these film canisters. And Kodak had sold all their processing stuff. We didn't know if they were N rolls, Z rolls, or what. So I asked Dad, when he came to me at 90 and said, I want my last debriefing. I think they've forgotten me. I used to get it every year. I lost my handler, and that's why I went to a congressman. And he wouldn't talk to anyone unless they knew his code name. And I said, well, Daddy, I've got to ask you. And that's part of what's in Jack Frost's book is my dad's story through my eyes as a little girl. When he told me, I asked him point blank, and when he told me, I went to the bathroom and fell to the floor, cried and threw up in the toilet, that Lee was on his team and that they had no way out. And that Lee never fired a gun that day, but he did handle one. And Dad begged to get out, and there was no way out. There was no way out. Lee was Naval Intelligence with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got documentation. I've got all my dad's naval career records from the Cuba, leading the fellow to recon over Cuba, going to Antarctic pictures. I mean, he was a photographer, so I've got 400 letters home during World War II. I mean, he talks about being friends with Madam Chiang Kai-shek, taking pictures during the war tribunal crime hangings. I got one picture of Dad taking pictures of Secretary of Defense Louis Johnson, and Omar Bradley says, hey, Phil, you're never in the picture. So I've got a picture of my dad in the Navy with a camera on his neck that Omar Bradley took. You know, I've got all this stuff, never released it, never told that story. He told me to tell. And I've got all this.
Have you written a book or produced
I've been told not to release it. I've been working on it for 30 years, and I've been working on it more previously since he died. I've got too much material. I've been told not to release it till after the midterms next spring. That Jack Ross book, for me, is a gateway and opening to the world of how I found out. I was mad at Jack at first. Because the book was, my chapter's the longest. It was supposed to have Dad's name on the cover. And I get the proof from Jack Ross, and it has my name on it. I'm upset. I said, no, I don't want my name on this. It's Dad's story. He started writing this, asked me to finish. He said, I couldn't tell your dad's story without doing it through the eyes of a little girl, like peeling away the layers of an onion.
Mm-hmm.
So I surrendered it to God and said, okay, let's get this done. Let's get it out there.
Who told you that you have to wait till after the midterms, and why would they, that doesn't make sense, but I'm just curious as to what their explanation was.
Well, I was sitting on the front porch, and I know this is going to be put on YouTube, and so I'll have to tell my family, but it was May 30th, and I was sitting on the front porch talking to this person who was Secret Service to Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. He came to my house for a debriefing for 3 days, 3 years ago. But five shots rang out. I live with 1,200 acres around me that's woods. And the sheriff's office came. I had a witness from the person I was talking on, and ever since then I've had drones flying over my house in the middle of the night. So for that gentleman's safety, he's elderly. I'm not going to reveal his name online.
Okay, but what is why does he connect this to the midterms, which are happening in, what, 6 weeks?
I don't know. I have no idea, no. I do not know.
That doesn't make any sense.
I do not know. And sometimes I just don't ask questions. Dad said, always keep asking questions. I don't have all the answers. We were on the phone, and there's some things you can't talk about on the phone.
Right. Well, that's true, but you should always ask questions. Don't be afraid.
So, no, I have a publishing attorney, and I talk with the team through Telegram, but I've had this happen before. It's not my first time. I can talk to you offline about the times I've been visited.
But this is, you know, I mean, we have the Supreme Court justices serve the best disinfectant is sunshine, right? And
right.
This is why we have the Fourth Estate, which is to shine light on these kinds of secrets. So,
correct.
I hope that you have a backup.
It's not at my house. It's in 12 different places.
Okay. All right.
Shauna, this is Casey. I just wanted to let you know, I think you're sitting on a gold mine, even after you've discussed the material about your father. But at the same time, if you want to go back into history, and especially the photography that he took during and right directly after World War II, that's pretty phenomenal material. So I'd be
MacArthur says only four witnesses, and we're going to close this off no photography. Dad was there taking pictures of them hanging them. I've got that picture. Do I release this and cause problems with relations of America with Japan today? I mean, do I just risk it, or do I release them or leave it alone? What do I do?
Dad told me he feared
more about people knowing about the Guam gallows than the JFK event. And mind you, Dad was in Tulagi Bay with Kennedy and broke his hand in a fight with him. So he sits there in his living room and tells me, when I'm a teenager, not knowing what this meant 50 years later, you know, and he's leaning back, they make a bullet that can go in the human body, like the head, and it's so small, and they can coat it with something, and it makes such a huge hole coming out the back end, and he was doing this. It took me 50 years after he died. This is the first time I ever saw those pictures. I didn't know what that meant.
The question you have to ask yourself is, what obligation do you feel you have to history? And that's something that, if you think that you have an obligation, then you publish. If you think there is a reason that maybe there's some overriding, superseding concerns about certain individuals who might be harmed if this information came out, you know, I mean, those are the kind of questions you have to ask yourself.
I love our country. I don't want to hurt our defense system, but I want the truth told, because this generation does not know and understand how important it is to be engaged and to vote.
Again, when information comes out, it helps the American public understand. For example, whenever I ask people who support the lone gunman theory, there, I said to you, like, I was having an email conversation with a woman on a Saturday night, and I said to her, so you think that the murder has been solved? Why are you spending your Saturday night having a dialogue with me? I don't think the murder's been solved, but you think it has been. And every time I ask a person who believes in the Warren Commission, say that, their answer is that what I call false patriotism. They feel that they're defending the honor of this country, that the people have lost faith in this country because of the Kennedy assassination, and they feel that they're doing their patriotic duty. So they're misguided, right? They think they're defending the country by hiding a sin that this country may have done. So whether, you know, I think the American people are not children. There are, when LBJ learns that Nixon was working behind the scenes with the South Vietnamese government and urging them not to reach a settlement before the election, LBJ and his counselors decided that the American people could not handle this information, that it would cause them to lose faith in our institutions, and that information, which was should have been very important to the American voter, was never released. So the American people, I think, are more than capable of understanding that our country is run by imperfect people. But we could talk, I don't want to take up any more time here, but I'm just saying that I can't imagine information that you might release that happened in 1945 or 44 is somehow going to jeopardize American national security. I mean,
it just would go back to the fact that we're told one story.
Yeah.
And there's another story of what really happened.
Well, sure. And there probably was a good reason at that time. Just like, you know, let's give LBJ a mulligan and say they truly were afraid that Casper was behind the assassination, and if they revealed the truth, he was going to come under so much pressure. I'm not saying I agreed it. I'm just saying, he really believed that, right? And that's why they had to hide the truth. Okay, that might have been a good reason in 1964. It's not a good reason now to not to tell the truth.
Correct.
Like, because then it could have been, but if that information came out now, Castro was dead, right? No one's going to say, let's say it was true. Let's say Castro did kill the president. Well, are we going to invade Cuba now? No.
Right. And that's why, Neil, I reached out, Ralph Thomas reached out to me, and I answered every question. I'll answer any questions. I wanted to know if Dad's story was not just true, but where did it fit in? And he sent it out to vet it. And he said some people in Europe have seen the other Zapruder film. I don't know if he gave it to someone that day in Dealey Plaza or if he gave it to his cousin Jesse Ray when he went straight to Garland Road. But I know he was terrified. And I know it destroyed his life the next 50 years.
Did your father explicitly run through his role and the events of November 22nd in Dealey Plaza with you?
The week of, he was carrying a lot of documents through left field, and I had not finished that story. He said that we didn't have TSA back then. It was just airport security, and they wanted to look in the film canisters. And he said, you can't. You'll expose the film. And I said, was there film in the film canisters? He says, yes. I said, I looked at him. I could tell he wasn't telling me everything. And I said, what else was in the film canisters, Daddy? And he goes, paper. I go, okay, you're making me fish. What was on the paper? And he said, the plans. Wow. I said, for Dallas? And he said, yes. And he was flying them to Boston. So I'd ask him more questions. I'm like, well, when you landed, it was 18, 20 years ago I asked him this. I said, how did you know who your contacts were? You know, I didn't understand how all this worked. You know, how did you know which cab to get in? How do you know sometimes he went in the warehouse, got the seat was in the briefcase. Sometimes he didn't. Sometimes he did. I remember playing in the briefcase with these little styrofoam granite airplanes when I would sit with him at, you know, and he taught me how to watch people. Understand, because he was an agency and so deep, I didn't understand other kids weren't raised like me. I was sitting at North Park Mall and he'd teach me how to read people, what color was their eyes, their hair, what were they wearing, their shoes, what do they do for a living, what car was that passed us 3 minutes ago, what kind of make and model was it, when I was 5 years old. I didn't know other kids were raised like that till I was older.
Shane, it's just for perspective, is your dad still Willis?
No, and people think it is. His name is Freddie with an I-E, Stillman, P-H-I-L-M-O-N, Spainauer, S-P-A-I-N, like the country Spain, H-O-U-E-R, Spainauer. And his name was so long on some of his Navy stuff, they just put Spain because it was so long. But as a child, he was known as Phil. And when he got in the Navy, they went to Freddie. And so he wrote over 400 letters home to his mother during World War II, and that's what got me started into asking, tell me a story, Daddy, at his knees, and tell me the backstory to this and that. I mean, I got a telegram announcing the end of World War II to the VISO dated August 15th, 1945, from the Secretary of Navy, James Forrestal, that Japan had just surrendered. And I scanned it in, so now I'm going to sell it so I can go on this trip with Gary Powers Jr., to Germany in March. It needs to be bought by someone and put in the museum somewhere, the Smithsonian or the Music Museum or something. It should not be in my custody. It should belong to the public, the American public. But no, it's not Phil Willis. I just married a Willis, but it's Spainauer is the name.
Thanks.
So, and for reference, my brother doesn't know everything. He knew he was agency, but he's got some issues and we're estranged, and he doesn't know all these details, and he's upset. He's starting to find out for us now.
Okay.
But my mother's still alive, and I've recorded her, and she can verify all this information.
Shana, on the, I think it's the Ralph Thomas website, I'm not actually sure, but there's a schematic that shows your father leaving his position behind the picket fence, going behind Pergola 3, down the Elm Street extension towards the front entrance of the TSBD. Was that immediately after the assassination? And was there anything he told you with respect to the steps of the TSBD, who was on it, whether Oswald came out, whether there
was... I'd love to find a picture of her down there, but I do have something. The I have his navy black trench coat. He took down there that day. And so there's a gentleman that came over from London who is about my dad's height, 5'8", 5'9", and we did a recreation of the black trench coat man over there and superimposed it on the old one, and it looks very similar. I can't say it is, but I still have that black trench coat.
Sean, I'll be wearing Casey again. I just wanted to remind people that this past spring in Olney, Illinois, we brought her on the program. And David, did you remember what date that was? Was that in like in April?
Yeah, that was in April. And the presentation that Shauna had gave, obviously it was a Zoom conference. We had a small in-person, you know, section. But if you wanted to see Shauna's presentation, we have available on flash drive and also on digital that you can purchase and download immediately. So yeah, we do have that available. I think that was
thank you.
17th.
I was so ill prepared for that. I'm not a professional speaker. I speak from the heart, and I go on these rabbit chases when you ask questions. And I wasn't prepared with my materials because I have so much. I still have Dad's police belt, the fingerprint stuff he'd use, his cameras from the Antarctic. But when I start speaking, I'll answer any question you have. I mean, his little black book from Naval Intelligence. The question I have for you guys, it listed everyone that graduated Naval Intelligence School with him and where they were assigned. And they gave, and it listed their type of clearance, and his type of clearance was called cosmic clearance. Cosmic clearance. If you gentlemen can tell me what that means, I sure would appreciate it.
That's the first time I've heard of that clearance level.
Maybe UFOs.
Well, I mean,
he made a lot of the lenses for the space satellites when he talked Jaffe into going to be an astronaut. Dad was doing the entire inventory of the United States Navy Photographic Department on index cards typing, and he learned to type in Garland. And he made and ground at Cameron Repair School, maybe taught him how to make these lenses for the, you know, to get clear pictures from 70,000 feet up going over Russia. He told Gary Powers, he said, you go in a certain time of day, and I can use my geometry and compute the shadow. I know how high that tower was, and I could tell you what frequency the transmission, the Russians are transmitting on. Everybody knows Powers is shot down. Nobody asked why he was going there. And Dad wanted the photography to compute how high the radio station was.
Shauna, will you be in Dallas for the Project KCSI?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I haven't worked it out with David and Judith's board yet, but she's aging out. She's got some health issues. She asked me to kind of take over the event coordination as director of the Dealey Plaza. I'd like to be a little more respectful and professional and have, the trumpets, get a color guard. My son is attached currently to the Dallas Police Force with the military, and I'd like to have a high school band there playing the Star Spangled Banner. I want to up the professionalism of the respect that Dallas should be doing for that event.
Are you from Dallas?
I grew up in Dallas, yes. My dad was from Dallas. That's how Dad got to stay here in Dallas after the event, and everybody else was disbanded and moved everywhere else. He asked the agency and went out. They said, you don't get out to your dad. He goes, well, let me stay here. My mom and dad are here. My siblings, my family's been here since the 1850s, so they let him stay. and he was embedded at Texas Instruments. Then he got positioned with the Dallas Police Department, and he finished out at the Dallas Fire Department.
Wow. I'm going to be in Dallas for 2 weeks in November.
I'll give you a tour.
I would love to meet you.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Mom. The only person Mom has ever met and talked with was Dan Storper, but I'm going to try to talk to her and see if she can entertain a few other people to ask her questions.
Can I ask you a follow-up question? Larry Steph asked you earlier about whether you have backups on the materials, and your response was something to the effect of it's scattered around in 12 places. But how much of it has been backed up? And also, is there any other person that's knowledgeable, God forbid anything should happen to you, that would be able to access all this material, put it together, and preserve it?
Everything's scanned in on these terabyte drives, and I have an attorney out of Austin and Tyler. I have 3 kids. I have 1 son. No one person knows where everything is, but they all know to talk to each other if something happens to me. So, yes, it is.
So, it has not been backed up yet?
It is backed up. All of it's backed.
All right,
been scanned in and backed up.
I think so. If something happened to you, did you break it up so that different people know where different things are so you can put the whole collection together?
Yes.
Good.
Those terabyte drives are expensive. It was 4 terabyte drives in Faraday bags.
Great.
Did your father have anything to say about DPT, by the Dallas Police, and their role?
Yes, there's one that wants to talk with me. He's 88, and he lives still in Texas, and he interrogated Ruby, and he wants to visit with me before he goes, and he has drawings that Ruby made, and he said they knew the feds were going to come in and take their stuff, so they had a room in the back of all these stenographers typing as fast as they could all the interrogations of Oswald and Ruby, and they made 9 copies. They taped them to the bottom of the desk drawers, and when the feds came in, the FBI started wiping things off the desk, and they left, and the guys looked at each other, and 9 police officers took their copies, and no one ever talked about what they did with their copies, and he still has his pages.
So you're saying were they taking stenography, or were they recording and then transcribing?
They had the recordings, and they were typing up what was on the interrogation recordings of Oswald and Ruby.
Because the sheriff, who was it, said that they didn't have any a tape recorder.
Fritz.
Yeah, well, they typed them up, and he had a copy. He's got about 9 pages of it at his house, and I'm supposed to go visit with him.
I mean, you could have a person taking stenography like you do, like in a deposition, without having recording. I'm just wondering.
Well, the typist, the one who takes the notes and the recording and typing it, bottom line is the Fed didn't know they had this pool of women in the back doing this and taping it to the bottom of their drawers.
Okay. Did he say the police were involved?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm supposed to get it or look at it when I go see this retired Dallas police officer.
Did he say that the police had foreknowledge or weren't involved in the assassination?
I don't know, but there's another person that he talked to. Are you familiar with the name Bill Mensel?
Yeah, William Mensel.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a DPT
officer. Finding this later in life. When I was 25, I managed apartments in North Dallas after college at Texas Tech, degree in finance. A lady I worked with was Artis Mensel. She's in declining health, and I need to get with her, but her husband was Bill. Didn't know the whole story. He was a pallbearer at Tippett's funeral. She said Bill was supposed to be where Tippett was that day.
Yeah, so Mensel's district was the district that Tippett was shot in.
Right.
Mensel took a lunch break and was at a restaurant, allegedly, when all this happened. And this is somewhat suspicious.
Artis is a good friend of mine, and I didn't know her husband's story till about 6 years ago.
and we've talked about it. So that's a conversation for another day, because with respect to David, I feel like I don't want this turning into a Chana Willis interview. This is something about, you know, your time is respectful. And I know y'all have lots of questions that might be good for another independent Zoom. David, how long do you want to do this?
Well,
I'll answer questions until y'all tell me to stop.
Yeah, I tell you what I'd like to do is I would like to get you on a spotlight. I think you'd be a very great person to do Q&A, and we can dedicate it strictly just to you. And because I know a lot of people have a load of questions. I know there's a lot of them that's going through my mind right now. I like the guy that you're talking about, the retired Dallas police officer. I think if I'm on the same page with you, and I think that I am, doesn't he reside in Paris, Texas?
No. But
okay.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Okay. I would say I did a lot of interviews. That's not one area that you like to go, let's just say that you like to go down there strapped. it's not usually a place that, you know, researchers, are very welcome, but you get a chance to, you know, pick the brains, so to speak, of different, retired police officers. But the one that you're talking of, I think I know who you're talking about, but like I say, we're not going to say his name here.
Right.
I think it would be great to have you on a spotlight. Because obviously, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions, that not only that you have, but we have of the information that you have. And I just got
And I don't know where all these stories Dad told me fit into your research. I'm not a researcher. I'm not logistics, ballistic statistics. I live with it.
Right.
You know,
who
tells the Dallas Police Department to have their health doctor not there the day Dad applies for his position, and a woman doctor's there and passes Dad on his physical after he's been in an airplane crash in Antarctic and had back surgery? She passes him and says, "Well, we all have to stick together, Chief." And he goes, "You been Navy?" And she goes, "Yeah, that's why I'm here." She was planted there to pass him to get on the police force.
You know, David, this might be something I know in the future that we could put Chana on here. But I know we will have one other availability program before we head to Dallas in November. And I don't know if it would be enough time, Chana, for you to put anything together for the October meeting.
I would like it to be before my surgery, October 27th.
I can get a scheduled spotlight going before October 27th. I think it's important that we get an evening with Chana Willis. I think.
Okay.
You said October 27th, right?
Right. And I don't know how these spotlights work, but you'll help me prepare what materials I can, because when I did it, they were all backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I will work with you. I know usually I do spotlights during the week, usually on a weekend. We usually do it on an evening.
Bless you.
And I block usually, you know, 3 hours. Usually two hours of presentation, an hour of Q&A. But we can do it whatever format that you want to do, whatever you feel comfortable with. But usually I try to do things, you know, like on a Tuesday or Wednesday is usually when spotlights go great. And we haven't had a spotlight series just because I've been, you know, with scheduling everything conferences this year. But I think, hell yeah, I think we ought to have one before November. And definitely before the 27th, which falls on a Thursday, maybe the week before.
Okay.
Sometime between the week of the 17th and the 21st. That'll give us some time. That gives us about a month, actually a little more than a month, to prepare something where we can put it together and do an evening with you. And I thank everybody that's in attendance. Also, the people watching this tomorrow, they're going to have questions, and this will be – I think this would be a great catalyst of you know.
And the questions help me remember more, and because I, you know, there's so much material, it needs to be framed right too. We need to work on that as well.
Hey David, I think you better leave about 5 hours for question and answer, because
I'm thinking this may be something.
This will be my first one, my first public one, other than that one you can find on YouTube where I allowed Kenneth Zediker to film me from the side. It was horrible. I was so scared.
I was so terrified. I'm not anymore. And I want, even before the book gets out, if there's any way to spread sunshine now in case something does happen to me, it needs to be done. We're losing days.
Yeah.
And I would.
Shana, it's Neil again. Sorry. What you know about William Mensel could be incredibly important. I don't know if you can write it down, put some notes down.
I can, but artist told me Bill was supposed to be where Tippett was, and he lived with regrets the rest of his life.
I mean, there's a researcher called Joseph McBride who believes that Mensel was in the car with Tippett looking for Oswald at one point, and possibly the car that pulled up outside of Beckley. It's Mensel's district that Tippett was shot in, and it's very odd that he was allowed to go for lunch, and he was involved in some other activities afterwards.
Lunch.
And seriously, this I'm not going to say Rosetta Stone, but this could be quite important in terms of what you know about that character. There's a few guys in the DPD in Oakcliff doing stuff like Nelson, Tippett, Bill Anglin, Harry Olson, that is really, really extremely odd. And if we can...
I didn't realize this. Artist calls me every few months. I'll be happy. That's his wife, his widow. We're friends.
Wow. Well, I think there's probably a whole bunch of people on this call today that would like to interview her. That's for sure.
I'll see what I can do. Maybe I can drive to Fort Worth and set up my computer there and y'all can pick her brain.
Well, as I say, I'm going to be in Dallas in November, as are a lot of the guys here, and it'd be great
to see you. Yeah. See, when my dad was with the fire department, it was before computers and the digital map. So I had the map go, and I would sit with him at 14, 15, all the way up to 18 years old. I was his navigator when he had to go to a major fire or fire death or something like that. And so I know all the streets and pretty well learned. I don't live in Dallas now, but my mom still lives there. So, yes, I'd be happy to meet you guys.
Well, I'd love to meet you.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna. And I will get back in touch with you after the meeting, and we will start working together to get something put on for the spotlight, and I'll get that announced just as soon as we nail down a date. Hopefully we can get that done in the next week of a date when we're going to do it, and then I'll work with Shauna to get the materials ready and prepared. So that way it's less hiccups for her, but she can concentrate on her story and her dad's story. Hopefully that'll flow even better than what we did in Oldie this year. So.
Right. And you'll have to keep me on track because Dad's book is his 91-year life story. This is just one chapter, but a lot of things he did led up to that chapter.
Sure.
And how he got involved in photo intelligence.
All right.
Yeah, that'll be a fascinating
Naval photo intelligence?
Naval photo intelligence. He was chief of photography.
Was he involved with the Maryland area where they developed the JFK autopsy materials?
I do not know, but I'll show you documents. But I'm going to Dropbox to David of him talking about his work at Bethesda.
Okay.
That Dad typed himself of what he did at Bethesda.
Well, this is definitely incredible, incredible stuff. I mean, this is what can be groundbreaking in a case. You know, so I want to throw my hat off to Shauna for, you know, taking on what she's doing and getting her dad's story out there, because it's going to be an important aspect with materials that she's sitting on and what her dad sat on for years. So.
Not without risk.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely.
And so if that risk unfortunately comes to light, I'm trusting you guys carry it on.
Well, you definitely will.
Why, there are a lot of people that don't want to say things and they take them to their grave. You're being very brave in sharing what you're sharing. And we obviously have a obligation to you if anything happens. Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Now that my kids are raised, I'm a little bit more comfortable doing it now that my kids are raised and out of the house.
Sean, I want to point out basically, without trying to step on my feet or anybody else's feet, that I think you coming into this organization right now, we really appreciate what you have gone through and maybe what you're going to go through later on. And I think Larry was trying to hit that on the head, but at the same time, most of us right now, and David, how many people are online right now? About 30?
Well, we had 30 sign up. We still have 21 with us.
Okay, because these people here, they are diehards. There's no doubt about it. And we've been on this case for a long time, and we'll continue on this. My second wife asked me, she goes, when we hit the 50th anniversary, she says, are we done? And I said, are we done? I said, they just opened the archives. What are you talking about?
And then she said, I'm done with you.
Well, I'm still on number two. Now, come on.
That was your first one. I forgot. She gave you 25 years.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I learned real quickly not to dig into it, because the one time I started to, I got in a lot of trouble from Dad when I wrote to John Kennedy Jr. A letter about our dads in the Navy together at Sloggy Bay, and it was a story of how Dad broke his hand in a fight with his dad. And I heard back, and I waited a month or two and told my dad I had shared that story with him. He got livid, man. He was mad that I even had communicated with him, and a few months later, John was gone. And I shut up after that.
Wait, a few minutes after then, John was gone?
Yeah, it's like the time Dad died in 2014, in August, and in October I spoke, and 2 weeks later, my stepson was run over and killed. He was 26. It absolutely had nothing to do with this event. Never mind that the man who got 5 years probation for running over my stepson as a pedestrian was his family's friends with the Bushes, and his grandfather helped Bush Prescott Sr. bail UT out of a financial thing, and he had a lot of money. But that has no coincidence at all with my stepson being run over 6 weeks after my dad died and I spoke the first time. No synchronicity there at all.
Was this in Texas?
Yeah.
Well,
2 weeks after I spoke the first time.
I don't even want to go there yet when I'm talking about Texas right now. But
yeah, no. So yeah. The dad story is what it is. If it fits somewhere and helps you guys out and helps our country remain to its core foundations, then I want that to be – that's what I want. I want our country to be back.
Well, we are very appreciative about what you're doing right now. And let's coordinate with David and let's see if we can do a spotlight program the next time that we do this, which will be in October and prior to your surgery. And we hope everything comes out good for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Shauna. Neil, are you still with me?
Yeah, I am. Don't know where to go after some of those revelations, David.
Well, I know, and like I said, we are going to have Shauna on for a spotlight in October, so it'll be before her surgery. But I wanted to kind of switch gears here just a second, and I want you to tell me about the October 1st, October 2nd.
Can I grab my screen? If it doesn't work out, David, just go onto the DD Flats UK website. But let me just try and grab the screen.
Okay.
Here we go. He says. Right. Can you see that, guys?
Yeah. We can see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So this is not the final schedule. This is the latest draft. It's not to the scale, obviously, of what you're doing in Dallas. It never can be, given the, you know, limited amount of researchers and, you know, participants in this thing, in the UK. But it's the first time that we're actually getting back together post-COVID. We last convened physically as a conference, if you like, in, spring 19. So it's great that we can, you know, get back together physically, both in a sort of formal teaching, you know, environment and socially as well. So effectively, I mean, obviously the market that I'm talking, the audience that I'm talking to here, there may be one or two people obviously from the UK, But obviously, if you replay this and put it online, this Zoom call, you know, somebody from the UK might obviously stumble across it or look for it, and we're still happy to take participants for that weekend. In terms of audience participants, and there's plenty of space with respect to the lecture theatre that we have. It's a significant lecture theatre that we've used for nearly 20 years, I think. So that's the schedule. I'm sharing my screen with you. That's the last incarnation of the schedule. And you can see we've got a pretty good lineup here. You know, Bart has released the last version of his various papers on the ladies in the TSBD and the, you know, the prayer man and the lunchroom encounter hoax, as he calls it, and the interviews at City Hall. So he'll be going through that. I don't know if you're familiar with Dave O'Brien. He's a journalist from Canada. He started getting into the case in the 60s as a teenager, and in fact he wrote to Dr. Perry in 68. That was quite remarkable that he got a reply from him. And he was fortunate to get into the TSBD in the late 70s. So I'll be interviewing him. He's written a couple of books. One co-authored with Johnny Cairns, who's a young researcher here from Scotland, who's a member of DPUK. So he's an interesting character. Then we've got, in the afternoon on the first day, we've got the three amigos, Casey, Brian and David, have all kindly offered to do a series of presentations. Brian, as we know, is shit hot, if I can use that expression, on the whole triangulation and ambush perspective of Dealey Plaza. David's done some new research on the throat, including new technology. And obviously, Casey's got that really good overview presentation that he's going to give us. There is actually a slight call to arms here because Nancy Wyford, I don't know if people know Nancy, she did a great book on George de Morenschelt, and she's really doing a deep dive into Frasier. However, sadly, she wrote to me yesterday, mother had had a dreadful accident. She's got a 91-year-old mother, and she had to have surgery, and she's had 78 staples put into her leg. So Nancy, unfortunately, has had to pull out. So call to arms, if there's anybody on this call that has would like to do a presentation, we have one slot at the moment available on the Saturday at 5:15 UK time. Following day, we've got Scott Reed. He's written articles for Kennedy's and King, and I think he has presented at Lancet conferences. He's doing something on William Duff. Johnny Cairns, who I've just mentioned, will be discussing Tippett and some of the physical evidence inconsistencies at Tenth and Patton. Russell Kent, you may know, he's going to do some stuff on the medical evidence. Paul Brown is a UK-based researcher who's going to do something on the pains. And we've got old stalwarts, old friends of DPUK, Larry Hancock, is doing some stuff on Oswald in New Orleans with his co-researcher, David Boylan, who you may know as well. That's kind of what we've got at the moment. It's not quite set in stone. I'm going to Stockholm on business next week, and I'm hoping to meet, I don't know if you know these guys, Staffan Westerberg and Pete Engwall. They are Swedish researchers. They've done articles on Tippett. They've done articles on the Coke bottle and Fritz's notes and other stuff. If you go to Greg Burnham's site, you'll see some of their work. So I may include them in the program as well, subject to my visit to Sweden next week. So that's roughly it. If you do want to attend physically, if there's anyone on the call that does want to attend physically, it's £50, and we have a formal dinner Saturday night, which is extra, and we have an informal dinner Friday night. As well, as I say, it's not to the scale of what goes on in Dallas, and to be fair, We do have a bit of an aging demographic with DP UK. There are some young researchers coming into the fold, but you know, this organization has been going, it's been going for probably 25 years now, and a lot of the guys are getting on in age. So I don't know if there's any questions with respect to what we're doing in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, Neil, let me ask you, are you guys going to be simulcasting this on Zoom or any of the...
No, so we really wanted to focus, David, on the, you know, physically attending the conference and not streaming it live. Obviously, there's a bunch of presenters who are remotely, you know, Zooming into us. But we really wanted to, having, you know, look, it's been quite some years now since 19, since we got together, you know, in significant size. So we really wanted to focus on that. Having said that, you know, like you, like your guys' society, we record everything and we have our own YouTube channel. And it will be available, all the presentations will be available post the conference, you know, online. It's just that in this particular case, we didn't want to muddy the waters by having streaming running along physical.
Okay, but the videos, for people that aren't able to attend in person, they will be able to see these after the event ends then, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. And I will take and put, I'll put a link on this, from our site to yours. You're already on the, you already have a link on there, but as far as your schedule goes, and the information of, you know, attendance and costs and so on, I'll make sure it's on our site, here within the next, I'll try to get done here in the next 24 hours. I apologize for already having it on there first, but, yeah, we're, I know the three of us are excited to take part in it, and it's the first time that I've spoke at Dealey Plaza UK. But I remember Dealey Plaza UK way back from Malcolm Blunt and also Ian Griggs. So I've been following you guys for quite so many years. So
yeah, I mean we've got a great history and a great pedigree. If you go back over several decades, guys that have spoken at Lancer and you know, people that have done very unique research. It's just, it obviously cannot be to the same scale as what's going on in the States and North America for, you know, for just for obvious reasons. But, yeah, it's a great group.
All right. Well, like I say, with the JFK assassination, not only affected the United States, but it also affected the world. And that's why we have Dealey Plaza UK, because, you know, it's not just something that, you know, is stuck to Texas and the U.S. It's, you know, across the pond. It's affected everybody for generations. And I commend you guys for continuing the research and the seminars that you guys put on. Always great work.
Yeah. Well, thank you, David. Appreciate that. And really, we are so grateful that you three are doing this for us as well. I mean, I just think this collaboration between the two groups is good. That not on the schedule there is that we are going to be having another interview, baptism interview, Malcolm Blunt as well on the Sunday. So we're just in the final throes really of finalizing the actual program, but you know, I think it's going to be pretty decent.
Okay, well, perfect. And make sure you send me some information on I know obviously SCR times, but you know, that's UK time, so make sure, I know we had talked about it before, but just send me an email with, you know, our exact times for United States times. We're all in the central daylight savings time zone. And that way we're not late and holding anything up. And, yeah, we're excited to participate.
Well, actually, David, I'm forming a DP UK Gmail group tomorrow for, presenters, whether they're physical or Zoom. So a lot of the stuff that you've just asked there, I will cover in that introductory email that I send you all. And that will be a group that can discuss the program and any of the technology issues as well, because obviously we have to get that right. So Casey, you and Brian will all receive that. And as I say, once again, if there's anybody on this Zoom call tonight, you can see the schedule there. If you would like to consider taking that 5:15, that's UK time, obviously, slot on the Saturday. If you've got something you think will complement, you know, the whole program, please get in touch with me. In a moment, I'll put my email address in the chat box.
All right. Thank you so much, Neil.
Okay. That's
cool. Neil, and I personally cannot wait to put this program on. I think that it's going to be a perfect thing for us and tie us all together a little bit more than probably what we have been. So thank you again.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Casey. Cheers.
All right. Well, let's see here. We're coming in at 3:30 our time. Anybody else would like to share anything? Anything we've haven't covered today, or anything you'd like to comment on?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Go ahead, Patrick.
I just wanted to ask if you had Joseph McBride on.
No, I have not seen Joseph since, what's it been, our Lancer days together.
Yeah, Into the Nightmare.
Yeah. I have
you not. You might be interested. I've seen him have different reactions to different situations, but he might be interested if you want to reach out to him.
Yeah, I tell you what, why don't you, you've got my direct email address, right? ProdigyFK@yahoo.com?
No, but.
I'll just put it here in the chat. But yeah, if you can give me, I know I don't have his contact information, but let me put this here in the chat log. And anybody that wants to reach out, you're more than welcome to. You can reach me at my email or my direct phone number, which is the 913-980-5351. Of course, that spells out JFK1.
Great.
Contact me, and I'll be more than happy to reach out to somebody.
Yeah, you can invite him and see how he reacts.
Yeah, I like to say I have several different ideas for some spotlight series. We haven't done a spotlight since I think it was December last year is when we did our final spotlight. And just this year, every time I've had an idea for somebody, I've gotten. Unfortunately, I've kind of gotten let down just because of scheduling issues. But I would like to start that back up again. I know we're going to have Sean on for one in October. I think anybody else that we can get lined up, that would be great.
Yeah, he'd be a good spotlight subject. He's very voluble, and he considers himself tremendously authoritative. And I know he's curious about the Tippett case.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be more than happy. I'll reach out to him as soon as I get some contact information.
Sure, David, good. I just have a comment. Not being
go ahead, Rick.
Even though I've studied the case since 1980, seeing Shana talk today gives me the sort of feeling that I guess people that started researching this case got when they spoke to people live, like live witnesses of the assassination. Just every word she would say was like, wow, that's something I haven't heard before, something new. And I think it gives you like a bit of adrenaline rush when you hear somebody like her talk about so many of these different facets.
Well, yeah, and I'll admit, I mean, you know, when we first started the Spotlight series and Spotlight, the journey meetings, putting the conferences and stuff that we do online, it has created a boost into kind of a lull that people are going through, researchers and also you know, the authoritative people on the case are getting a kind of a revamp on a new way of getting information out there and being able to get together and talk with people. So I'm like I say, we're happy to do it. It was something that I talked to Brian and Casey. I said, you know, I've got an idea. I said it'd be like the Today Show and the Tonight Show all mixed together, except it's uncensored, so we say whatever shit we want, you know.
Right.
So
for all of the folks listening here today, I'm going to give David Knight my cell number. Y'all reach out to him. Anyone that participated today, David, give my number to them if they want to call and pick my brain.
Okay, absolutely, yeah. Send that to me, and I will. Actually, I think it may be here in your email. Let me scroll down here. Yeah, I've got your cell number here. So, yeah, if anybody wants to reach out to Shauna and ask her questions, she just gave you guys the go-ahead. So I think it'd be a perfect opportunity to to speak with her and hear what she has to say and email me or call me and I'll pass the information on to you.
Hey, Rick, this is Casey. I just wanted to point out to you, I've been doing this for well over 55 years and I know I've been accused of beating a dead horse. And I realize that I am beating a dead horse, but you know what? When Shauna came on here today, but I had talked to her before, I think we have a new jockey on this dead horse, and I think the dead horse is going to get up and do a little bit of trotting here. So, Shauna, I appreciate it. But I would also have to, at least, Shauna, if you can, and I'm not trying to, put Larry on the spot, but I think I think he being a lawyer, he would definitely be a person to at least talk to on the rule of law and maybe what you probably should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. But at the same time, we honor what you are doing right now and please continue with that.
Yeah. And I want to make it. Well, thank you, Larry. And Casey, I just want to make it clear to the American public who may be watching this later on is I would do nothing to hurt our country. And I love our country dearly with next to God with all my heart. But at some point, some truth needs to be told in sunshine so we are not manipulated into a false narrative of what we need to be doing.
John, what kind of lawyer are you working with?
A publishing attorney where I could put some of my material.
Okay, all right.
I don't have any. See, there's an agency off the books we have 16 intel agencies. There's one off the books, the National Archives. And the second I ask for Dad's 201 file, things are going to disappear. So, you know, I'm stuck at that point is where I'm at. I'm stuck.
Well, let's talk offline. I mean, we could do a protective filing, but there's other people we know that, you know, might be able to help you as well that specialize in Freedom Information Act stuff. So, but we'll talk offline.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'm looking here in the chat log, and we have a somebody with us that is their first time actually being live with us, but they've seen our Zoom Zoom shows in the past. His name is Thomas. Garcia. Okay, Thomas. Well, you said you had a few questions for the group, so go ahead, ask some questions.
I do. It's not as hard of a name once you say it out loud. So, thanks for giving it a try. This is my first time here. I've seen all the previous Zoom, and you guys kind of compelled me to join today, and to really consider if not. I've been to a few conferences in Dallas, but since 2014, and I've been a private researcher for probably the last 25 years. And I have a question or two for some of the different people who spoke today, and maybe if they're compelled to, they can just answer them. I kind of specialize in from 12:30, the day that the shots rang out, to the day that Ruby took Oswald out. So that's kind of my area of specialty. And I'm not an expert. I'm not even sure if I consider myself a researcher. I'll let that be up to you and the public. But one of the questions that I would have for, is it Larry or Lawrence Snap? But I was very interested in thanking for all your efforts. You can tell that, you're incredibly dedicated. One of the questions I had was that all of the existing records questions are be going through the executive branch. And you're working with the archives. Has there been any consideration towards actually rewriting or amending the act now that we've had 5 years? We're coming up on 5 years, October 2017 of the release of the files, and now here we are 5 years. We have 5 years of evidence of pushback. And maybe some of that evidence and documentation can be used to rewrite the act so then we don't have another 5 years. I think that's what KCQ was talking about. So that was one question. It might be too high level, but that was.
No. Actually, that is part of the letter that we sent to Carolyn Maloney, who was chair of the House Oversight Committee, and my conversations with the committee counsel. One of the questions that has come up is that the ARB had made in their recommendation number 7 to their final report from 1998, they had suggested that Congress consider whether either ARB or another agency or commission be established that would have the powers of the ARB. Whether, first of all, whether the National Archives felt they needed additional powers to adequately administer the JFK Act. The National Archives is technically the successor to carrying out, let me take a step back. So the JFK Records Act stays in effect until the archive is certified to the president that all of the JFK records have been released in full. So even though the ARB is gone, the law is still in effect, and the National Archives is currently administering the law, but it doesn't have the same powers that Congress gave the ARB. And so I have asked the House to, and they've told me they forwarded that question over to the House, the Senate. The Senate, when they have their confirmation hearing with the archivist, to ask her if she thinks she needs that power. And if she does, then she would ask Congress to consider, given it's a timely issue given what's going on with Trump in Florida, the whole issue about national security. But, you know, we put that question on the table. Whether they're going to act on it, I don't know.
Thank you, because, you know, you mentioned the fact about the new archivist and that she may need or may request that additional power, and that could be incredibly helpful, or at least a more fair explanation to the folks who are asking for the documents, and at least understanding some of the explanations that come out. So thank you. I appreciate you following that up. If I may ask one or two more, we have time. If we could extend the Tana Gail Willis topic, just one more quick brief minute. I really do appreciate, Chana, everything that you shared, and I'm sure that some of this is going to be the more people that disclose, the more of the picture is revealed. So I personally, I'm sure I'm speaking for everybody. Thank you for that. You mentioned early, and it really caught my attention, that your dad had a photo and that he was in a position where there was somebody with a rifle behind the fence. I guess my question would be, how was your, I know you said that you were a Texas resident and that you guys lived in Dallas for a while, but how did your dad get in that position to, you know, because the, you know, we don't really know who was where and behind that particular fence. But the fact that if a photo existed, obviously that the Rosetta Stone kind of moment. I was wondering,
right,
if you could tell me how he got there, and just if you could retell the story about where the photo, I know that you disseminated the information in 12 different places, but where or how is that photo being developed again?
A gentleman from Brazil contacted me last fall and said he had been given this picture, and so I held an international Zoom with Robert Groden and some other researchers in Europe and the UK and Poland, Switzerland, and the United States, and at that time I was substituting in Winsboro School District, and I had a student involved as well. I picked one student out of the district who seemed to be interested in following the research, and we held a Zoom. And the gentleman is a professor at a college in Brazil. He spoke Portuguese and Spanish, so I hired my retired preacher to be an interpreter, which made it more difficult because he didn't speak English, to look at this picture. And it's kind of blurry, but it is there at the picket fence. And when I asked people if there are any pictures of a possible shooter from behind the picket fence, they always say in front. No, I said, no, it was from where my dad was standing, and there's a man there, and it's a very blurry picture of this man with a rifle. And I have not authenticated it, but it's the only physical evidence I've seen of someone behind the fence, because I don't know where my dad's film witch is. When Ralph Thomas researched everything,
he was president, and he's out of Austin, of this worldwide investigators group. I won't call it a union, but a society or whatever. To vet what my dad's story was, and I gave him a lot of materials, and I said, could this be true? And he said some people from Europe had seen the Others of Kruger film that they believe my dad took. And with my dad's history, you know, when you're that far up in intelligence, you don't write everything down. But if he had some things written down, he shouldn't have written down. He was Navy Master Chief of the United States Navy in photo intelligence and made the camera systems in the U-2 planes, ran VAPE 62. If you want to Google that, it's VAPE 62, the heavy reconnaissance over Cuba, a lot of the missile programs and testing and things like that. And I don't know until I get his 201 file if the Navy knew he was CIA, but I have his voice recording that he was also for a time with the FBI. I have a lot of audio that I talked with my publishing attorney that needs to be transcribed that I recorded him talking about these things. And mother's in the background. I'm kind of talking loud because he was hard of hearing. And I started to put them in a repository, a Dropbox. So I'm going to start sharing with David and Casey. And the materials, Casey, frankly, there's so much. I don't know if you can hear me. And there's so much material. If y'all would just go look at it and listen to it, tell me what's there, because that's how he got there. In the spring of 63, after he was on the Enterprise with John McCain and the Russian MiGs flew over the deck of the Enterprise in the Cuban waters, we were off Florida, they raced to the Mediterranean. He got flown back to Bethesda. For his back went out from the airplane crash in the Antarctic. They said, Master Chief, they call him Chief, we got to retire you out and get you to Dallas as soon as possible. They knew things were really heating up with Kennedy and Khrushchev. So we left Florida and got to Dallas November 4th and stayed with my grandparents 2 weeks. And they had a house arranged for us over off Riverside Drive, 7 miles from downtown, furnished, because all our furniture was still in Navy storage. And it was 7 miles from downtown. And a guy knocks on the door that night and said, this is where you go work next week. And he was carrying plans for the big event. And so he wasn't just a photographer. He was involved before, during, and after. He told me about the code names of using vegetables and fruits and things like that. And that's how he got involved. He had been involved in Navy intelligence prior to this thing. You have to understand, this man, I now look at him as a man, not just my dad, was in Tulagi Bay with Kenny during World War II when they were laying submarine nets to keep out the Japs out of the Tiburon, Tulagi Bay area, and had a little problem with the PT boat. But that's how my dad got involved in this. It started long before that with his commitment and his oath to his country and preserving those idealisms that were so emblazoned in a Navy sailor back then. At that time, he was enlisted, but he was at the top of his career at that point.
So
in the end of his career.
Do you think he was there as a resident, there to see the
No, he was there for the agency. He was there for the CIA and ONI filming, because Lee was on his team. Lee was ONI. Lee was on his team, is what he told me.
Okay.
Before he died. And he was there to film. There was no way out. Somebody on his team had already committed suicide that week, and another one went crazy, and he thought it was going to happen to him, and there was no way out. And he suffered. My brother and I suffered the next 30 or 40 years from that. I won't go into details about that. But near the end of his life, we got some closure.
Thank you. There's a lot of descendants and children of brave people that are doing courageous things. So thank you very much.
Well, meeting E. Howard Hunt's son, St. John, and seeing him read that letter to Carolyn Kennedy, and knowing how my dad responded when I contacted John Kennedy Jr. and talking to Gary Parrish Jr., I suddenly didn't feel alone. I've met other agency kids. I'm not like you guys with all this research. I don't know the knowledge, the wealth of knowledge you have, but I know lived this. I remember going on the drops with him and seeing those briefcases handcuffed to his wrist sitting at Muffield.
Thank you. Well, I have probably 94 more questions, so I'll stop there. But I'll just echo the request for Joe McBride. I think that would be fantastic. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Appreciate the welcome for everybody. I enjoyed the 3 hours.
Thank you for being part of it. And, you know, hopefully we will see you in future meetings. So it's always nice to have new people in the room. And also on top of that, I mean, just to throw it back into, you know, what's so important about doing the meetings that we have. And then when we bring them into YouTube, I just want to take a quick thing and show it up here on YouTube real fast. We had just a little over 100 subscribers about the last meeting that we did, and now we're sitting at looks like 321. So if you go to Product GFK, or if you go to Yahoo, if you go to YouTube, I'll get this shit right in a second. You go to YouTube and type in Product GFK or any of our media or any of our videos. You know, make sure you hit that subscribe button, and that way, whenever a new video comes up, you will be one of the first to know. And we're starting to find some nuggets of videos that you know, hasn't seen the light of day. I mean, there was one with Craig Roberts and Ed Hoffman that was filmed way back in 90. What was that, Casey? 94,
95? 94. Am I still on?
Yeah, yeah. It was back in 94. I mean, that was a great presentation, you know, that we had from our original in-person conference back in Olathe, Kansas. Just like if people want to see a video of William Law, David Mantic, it's also got, of course, it has Jim Jenkins and Dr. Michael Chester. It was a impromptu gathering. Actually, I filmed it in my hotel room. That was filmed back at a Lanford conference, and I was kind of in between my bedroom, my hotel room, and also down at the conference itself, filming in two spots. It's called a meeting of the minds. It's one of the I can't say that the video quality was the best. It's not like what I have today, but you know, this was filmed before William Law brought out Jim Jenkins' book at the Cold Shoulder of History. You know, it's a great video. It's only got 506 views. Some of our other videos we have, I mean, they're in the thousands. I know Larry just hit a milestone of 9,400 views on Larry Rivera's Journey meeting. So, I mean, I'm proud of the work that we do. I'm proud of the YouTube channel. Of course, like I say, we film live today. This replay will be up on the channel tomorrow morning. So let's hit that subscribe button. If you like videos, hit the like button, and you know, help us grow to it. I mean, we don't make any money off of anything like that. It's not like I don't have an OnlyFans website or page or anything. We're not like that. But I tell you what. I want to grow the subscriber list, because the nice thing is, the more subscribers that we get, you know, we come up in, our videos will start coming up in, Google's, you type in JFK assassination, some of our videos will start showing up in the, top list without having to keep on clicking load more. If you've been to, YouTube, subscribe, you go to our website, there's actually a place you can subscribe on our website as well. And it's getting the community to grow. It's getting our website to grow and be the one-stop shop, you know, that I had the vision of, 4 years ago, I guess, when I started this portion of Product GFK. I mean, Product GFK has been around for decades, but we took the technology, we took the Zoom and the website to where it is today. And I mean, I'm proud of it. I think we're doing a great job, but I always want to do better. So, with that, I mean, we're hitting the 3 hour mark right now. And, I don't want to keep us going on and on forever, because sometimes the videos get too long and then people kind of give up on them. But I definitely want to say we're going to be back for, two shows in October. We'll have the October Journey meeting, and then, we're going to have Shauna on to do a spotlight in October. I want to wish her the best in the surgery she's going to have. you know, but we want to get her on before she goes under the knife, so to speak. Been there for having back surgery, and I know it's a scary proposition to have. With that, if anybody wants to throw in some last remarks in, we have just a few minutes for that, and otherwise we'll close this meeting out, and we will see everybody again in October. So if anybody wants to say something in closing, let's go ahead and...
Just a reminder that if you have a senator that sits on that Senate Homeland Committee, please ask them to ask the archivist if they need additional authority, and to ask for a commitment to follow up on the outstanding record searches from the ARB.
That's a very good recommendation, Larry, and I'm going to do that. And I do have one concluding remark. In doing these things, my hesitation is I never knew who is participating, who is really one of them with not good intentions. And I would say in doing all this, I want to honor the story of JFK to Carolyn and Robert Kennedy Jr. And if there is an issue with me spreading sunshine, you don't have to tell me twice. Come tell me before you do anything that would hurt me or my family. I'd rather be hurt for my family and my kids. But I believe in spreading sunshine on the truth because I love my country.
We'll let you know if we have to put any shade on you.
Okay, thank you.
What's the name of the book sounded like Jack Frost?
His name is Jack Roth. Jack Roth, R-O-T-H, is the author, and he's speaking in Dallas at the conference. And I forget the title. It was initially going to be Ripples in Time, but the publisher made him change the title. He interviewed 25 people, and my chapter and my dad's is one of the longest in the book. And I'm glad the story's getting out. I need to get over some of my fears still to get the rest of the things Dad wrote out in the spring. Guidance would be appreciated. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Shauna. Well, with that, I think we're going to bring this here to an end. So I'm David Knight with Project JFK CSI Dallas, along with Casey Quillen and Brian Edwards. And I want to thank everybody for taking part today. And like I said, the replay will be up on YouTube tomorrow. So everybody, stay in good health, and keep researching, keep speaking the truth, and we will see everybody in October.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, young lady.
Later.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Sorry, man. I had a lot of stuff here to take care of at the store.
That's okay, Larry.
All right. Well, we're up to date, huh? We got to get on that blender thing. You know, I could have... let me go see how many different formats, you know, I can get that to you.
Okay. Yeah, I will give you a call. I'll try to give you a call tomorrow sometime, and maybe we can work it out, because I definitely want to give the shot at. I mean, I got into the 3D printing last week, and I tell you what, it's been, you know, every time I turn around, I'm printing something. So I'm building up, you know, the first print was not bad. And then I kind of went into a lull for like 2 days, and things weren't turning out correctly. And now I'm back on the uptick again. So it's a learning curve.
Up in there, because I did that back in, what, 6-7 years ago already? Wow.
Long time to revisit.
Yeah. So I'm sure that, you know, things have improved, you know, and somebody will be able to, you know, get it going. I don't think it's really that complicated. You know, a mesh is a mesh. You just got to port it, you know, into other formats. That's all.
Yeah.
Printer formats are specific to printers are specific to a certain format. And not only that, the software that they're going to use to print on the printer. So.
Yeah. But I think we can get it done. Absolutely.
Oh, that would be great if we can get Dr. Mantic to fondle one of those, you know.
I definitely want to make sure he gets a one of those in his hand, because I think that'll just
he's the first one that should have it.
Yeah.
You know, he's at the top of the list.
Well, the first one I want to have it is you. And then we'll give it to David. Because you're the one that built the model. So.
And the texturing, I don't know if they're going to be able, because, just the model in white is good enough, you know, in PVC or whatever. But,
yeah,
you know, that's how far you can take this by even texturing, you know, the model using the texture that's applied in Blender, you know. So.
Yeah, well, I'll be printing it in PLA Plus or PLA Pro. That's the material it's in, and you can print. Yeah, you can print the texture on the model. So that way, what I'm hoping to do is once I get it printed, then I can, you know, either hand paint or airbrush the.
Well, that's the thing. That's exactly what I was just going to mention. The process also involves, because the model not only has the texture applied, but it also has the actual, the puck marks, you know, the, yeah. You know, not, it's not just the picture, but also how the indentations go. And that's done by what's known as a normal map. And a normal map is just basically the image in black and white. And then Blender, what it does is it interprets the depth based on the hue, the darkness of the white and the black and white areas, and then applies it to the model and integrates that with the image itself. I hope I haven't messed everybody up with that. But that's basically how it works.
Yeah, and I tell you another thing I'm going to work on is the image of the doorway. I'm going to make a three-dimensional model of that, and then we'll actually see everybody that is in the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, with the use of Blender, what you've done, and now I'm going to take it into making it actually something you can hold in your hand. There's limitless possibilities.
Yeah, that's a good one. We tried, we proposed that again 7 or 8 years ago with some other researchers, and we never got to the first phase, but that was also, you know, being talked about.
Well, I couldn't beat the deal on the 3D printer, and now, like I say, I'm having all kinds of...
Absolutely. Let's do it. We'll talk tomorrow. I got to go. I got some people to take care of here.
I'll give you a shout tomorrow. And everybody else, we will see you guys in October. So have a great day and a great rest of the weekend.